Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Everybody, welcome to Q&A. So today, Jason Link asks, what's the best thing you can say in a job interview that gets you hired? Excellent question, Jason. There is actually something that you could say, something that you could do that has a huge impact in a job interview, and that is for you to tell the interviewer, I want this job. Now, let me explain for a second, because there's a bit of an explanation here. There is a standard job interview question where they ask you, why do you want this job? Okay, that's a standard interview question. It is another form of them saying, why should we hire you? Okay, now I've already done a video on how to answer that question. I'll put a link in the description. Long story short, if they ask you, you know, why do you want this job? You say, well, as I understand it, you're looking for somebody who, and then you go down the list of job requirements saying how you speak to each one. Okay. How you satisfy each one. Okay. That's the short answer for how to answer that question. But this is something else that I'm talking about now. Okay. This is not you answering a question. This is you unprompted telling them, I want this job. Okay. It's a statement. And it's very powerful. And here's why. When you interview as a candidate, most interviewers, whether they are recruiters or hiring managers, especially hiring managers, they will make the assumption that you want this job in the sense that you want a job because you need money, but that you're not particularly hell-bent or passionate about this particular job, like doing these duties and having these responsibilities and working here, okay? They're going to make this assumption about you that that's the case. Now, for a lot of candidates, that's true, okay? But for other candidates, it's not. You know, you are particularly attached to this job and you're passionate about it. And if that's the case, you need to say this line. You need to communicate this to them. Okay. Because that's what they're looking for. They're looking for hiring managers and recruiters. They are looking for a candidate who is not only qualified to do the job. There are quite a few of those, but they're looking for someone who's qualified and they're passionate. Okay. About doing this particular job. That's what they're looking for. Okay. So if that's what you are, you need to communicate that. Okay. Maybe I can just tell a bit of a personal story here to illustrate this. I've been on both sides of this question in my career. And the last time that I was a candidate, and this kind of came up, was a few years ago. I was interviewing with a company. They flew me out to Toronto, Canada, to do an interview with the CEO of the company. And it wasn't in an office. This was in a public place. This was in a restaurant in a convention center in Toronto. So I went to Toronto. I met the CEO. I did this job interview. And just so you know, this does happen a lot. A lot of job interviews do happen in public places. And so it was about an hour long, and they asked me a lot of the kind of standard job interview questions and a few other things. And one of the questions that they asked me, my answer turned into a bit of a two-way exchange, you know, like a conversation. And so I said to them, listen, you know, I want to tell you something very important, and I want to make sure you're listening. Are you listening? And they said, you know, yeah, I'm listening. Go ahead. So I said, okay, I want this job. I'm very suited to what you're looking for here. And I'm very passionate about doing this kind of work. And this is a tremendous opportunity for me. So I just want you to know that I really want this job. And they said something like, you know, okay, you know, okay, gotcha, you know, thanks for sharing. And I got the job. Now, this was a surprise to me because I knew that I was up against a few other candidates who were probably more qualified than I was. I mean, I was qualified, but they had more years of experience and maybe better qualifications than I did. And they were kind of, as far as I was concerned, they were probably going to get it. But what I suspect happened was that although they were more qualified technically, they probably didn't communicate how passionate they were about it. Okay? So in my case, a little bit of passion made up for perhaps slightly less qualifications, but I was still qualified. Okay? So that illustrates the power that this can have. And it's a very general thing, so it works in, I believe, most situations. This is going to work, or it's going to have an effect anyway. So hopefully this was helpful. Thank you for sending in this intelligent question. Keep sending me intelligent questions. I love to read them and I'd like to respond to them.
It's another Monday in the world of remote work. Depending on when you're listening to this, you might be gearing up for another day of sitting in front of your computer in your Zoom sweater, trying to get stuff done via video conference. We're, of course, familiar with the challenges of remote work already. Big group calls can be awkward and inefficient, and it's hard to replace the serendipity of running into someone in the break room. But lately, some new services have been trying to solve for those issues with virtual office spaces. Our tech columnist Christopher Mims visited one himself, and he joins me now to talk about what he saw. Hey, Christopher, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So you visited the virtual offices of IDE Corp. They were using a space through a service called Gather. Can you talk about what that experience was like?
I have visited a number of corporate offices in my time. So it was strange to visit a virtual office that reminded me of real world ones, which are, you know, kind of whimsical, like, Airbnb. They have all their conference rooms, which are modeled after various apartments on Airbnb. So being in a virtual office where there were, you know, desks and conference rooms and, you know, a stage for people to give talks and a cafeteria and a bar, and the office is actually in a castle and there's a beach. It was really funny how, even though I'm walking around it with my avatar, I felt in some sense like I was there. And maybe that's, you know, decades of playing video games, but I also think that there is a lot to be said for the way that video games, their design over decades has been refined to really tap into innate abilities that we have. So, for example, in our brains, we have place cells, which are physical analogs. It's an individual neuron that lights up when you go to a place. And you can see this in the brain of a rat when it's traveling through a maze, for example. Or if you talk to people who win the annual World Memory Championship, a lot of them use what are called memory palaces. So you imagine a house and you walk through it and you place the objects you want to memorize in the house. That works so well because we have this huge section of our brain which is devoted to place and geography and navigating in three-dimensional space. We just don't use it with our existing interfaces for communicating remotely. So when I went into a virtual 2D office and started walking around, the thing that really struck me was like, oh my God, I'm using more of my brain and it feels more natural. So when I'm in a virtual HQ hosted on, for example, Gather, it's very easy. I just use my arrow keys and I'm moving in two dimensions, just like, you know, Link in The Legend of Zelda. And at the same time, they have incorporated sort of the minimum requirements for communicating in that space as we would in a real one. And one of those is spatial audio. So if my avatar is next to somebody else's avatar, we can talk freely in these little bubbles, just like we would on Zoom through video chat. You know, if we walk away from each other, the sound fades and then dies completely. So you can create these clusters of conversation, or you can walk up to somebody in the hallway and have a chat with them that's private, or you go into a room and only the people in the room can hear each other. So this allows, you know, based on my interviews with the people who are working in these types of spaces, this kind of more spontaneous collaboration like we're used to in an office. At the same time, because you can make yourself more or less available, you can turn off your camera, you can say I'm away, you're not tethered to your desk as you would be in a physical space. Going to this office, it really struck me how quickly I was able to, you know, interview a lot of people just by walking up to them. And that just doesn't work with the friction of, you know, a Zoom call where it's like, oh, where's the link? Okay, here, log in. I'm waiting for you to log in. Is everybody here? Oh, you're muted. Just all of that extra friction really gets in the way of spontaneous communication, I think.
And Gather is one of a number of companies offering similar services. Just how widespread are these types of platforms, and how are companies using them?
There are a lot of companies using them. I mean, one of the biggest ones, which is called Remo.co. They're used a lot for events. They told me that they have, you know, multiple hundreds of thousands of monthly active users. Spatial Chat claims similar figures. You know, they have people using them from, you know, every big tech company you could imagine, and, you know, plus Boeing and a bunch of other Fortune 500 companies, not all of which are paying members, because, of course, they all have a freemium tier. So it is nascent, you know, hundreds of thousands of monthly active users. But if you're having a few big events, you know, that could only be a few dozens or hundreds of individual companies. But it has impressed me that the biggest ones by just traffic are bootstrapped. And they're like, look, we're already making revenue. We don't need investment because we're able to pay our server bills from people signing up. That is, of course, a very powerful signal that something is sticky and it's working. If you can get to revenue, if you can go from nothing to a product that is making money in 9 months, like, that's a very compelling space generally.
So it sounds like a lot of users. And how are all these companies using these types of platforms? It sounds like it might just be more about special events than it is about, you know, putting in your full 9 to 5 from the virtual office.
I think that right now, the initial use case for most companies and organizations is events, because partly that allows them to just dip their toe. It's low commitment. I mean, if you're going to have a holiday party in one of these, people don't have to adapt their work style to it. It's just spend a couple of hours walking around some virtual space. So companies using it to work in, I think, are in the minority. I've also heard interesting use cases like people holding scientific meetings and, you know, they build out this big hall. And then everybody's standing in front of their scientific poster. And, you know, anybody who's ever been to a science meeting or a medical meeting knows that that is this sort of central ritual for disseminating new data and information, and also just like meeting people in your field. And, you know, it's the science fair for adults, but it's really important in academia. So it's been interesting that so many universities and other institutions seem to be using it for those kind of events. Others, you know, are using it for parties. Some are using it just to replace, you know, what people, the old, you know, the stuff that we all used to go to in convention centers where you'd go to a talk, but the real substance of it is having coffee or a drink with somebody after the talk is over.
Chris, if I can put on my cynical hat for a second, during the pandemic, I feel like a lot of workers are struggling with Zoom fatigue and with the sort of always on mentality that comes with being fully remote. These services seem to require more presence out of employees, and that seems like a potential challenge.
I think as with Zoom, as with Slack, you know, where we were promised this is the future of remote work. And then once you're kind of forced to use like really high doses of these things, you really run into their limitations and you get Zoom fatigue or Slack ennui or whatever we want to call it. I think that the same could be true for these. On the other hand, I think that there is the potential for them to be the next evolution that makes it a little bit more sustainable. I mean, remote work experts I talked to cautioned against companies saying, oh, this tool is going to solve our problem for us. At base, I think the real challenge with remote work is companies need to establish a bunch of new norms, in some ways very different from what we are used to in an in-person office, where norms can be established by osmosis. Like, they have to be more deliberate. And, you know, whether or not you're using a virtual HQ, you know, being forced to, you know, everyone share what they're working on, you know, in some kind of document that can be accessed asynchronously, all those little nuances of how, what it takes to make a really functional remote workforce work, that doesn't go away. The tool doesn't solve for that automatically. But maybe it makes it, you know, a little bit easier.
So it sounds like you think this is something that might be here to stay as we move into at least a more heavily remote workforce in the future.
Absolutely. And I also think that ultimately we're building toward kind of a more complete fusion of the internet and real life through, you know, mediums like augmented reality. In some ways, I think we're laying the tracks now for that. So the more we get used to collaborating remotely through all these tools, the more natural it will seem to toggle between what we're doing in the real world and what we're doing on the internet via other things like our glasses, our VR headsets, our ever more mobile devices, our wrist-based whatever.
All right, that's our tech columnist, Christopher Mims. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, as far as a COVID update, I'm the one that had talked about no plexiglass partitions and all these various things going on. Well, still haven't got plexiglass. Just keeping a mental note and, you know, just jotting things down. Our company has stopped providing us with disposable masks, and they gave us some washable ones, but after, I would say we're going on a year almost, so we've been doing this for about 10 months, you know, a cloth mask is just not going to hold up washing the elastic on the ears, which is why I kind of went to the disposable ones, because they're easier to, you know, when you take them off after a day's worth and just dispose of them. So I'm going to probably circle back on. Something that we need as far as a supply. And today, with all the things that I've been kind of keeping aware of, and as I told you, our county did get to the highest elevation. So I did two things today. I called our safety hotline and left a message with a couple of things, and it instructs you to submit something online, which I really didn't want to do because I knew it would be tied to me, because it won't let you do that anonymously. But I did go ahead and draft a letter, which I'll go ahead and read real quick. I said, I would like to report an ongoing problem in fill in the blank department with those who disbelieve in COVID-19 and the recommendations set forth by fill in the blank with company name to maintain a safe and healthy work environment. Disrespectful joking and comments can be overheard towards and about those who choose to appropriately distance, wear face masks, disposable gloves, and practice protocols to sanitize workstations, shared equipment, and high traffic areas. In some cases, the comments overheard are so demeaning that it may be seen as passive-aggressive behavior and falls under the stipulations of contributing to a hostile work environment as set forth in the Employee Handbook and Code of Ethics. Observation of continued violations of COVID-19 workplace safety protocols include, but not limited to, the following: rampant incorrect wearing of masks, mouth and or nose deliberately uncovered, people holding face shields in front of their faces rather than wearing correctly, 2, repeated leaving individual workstation and mingling in common traffic areas unmasked, which prohibits the ease of flow of traffic or other employees trying to adhere to 6-foot distancing guidelines. Number 3, flagrant disregard of 6-foot social distancing by congregating under the guise of working in and around fill in the blank department areas. Number 4, unnecessary interruption of productivity by standing at a masked employee's workstation without wearing a mask and feigning offense when reminded of their noncompliance. As fill in the blank county has experienced an escalation of cases to where we are now classified as the highest status all the aforementioned has occurred. If possible, this week it appears the disregard has reached an apex to where it cannot be seen as accidental, but rather as willful and intentional insubordinate of workplace safety dictates. And then I end with, what can be done about these abuses or noncompliance to COVID-19 policy and procedures to ensure the continued health and well-being of safety-conscious employees and their families as we continue to navigate the pandemic? And I also printed off, in case I'm asked about it, our handbook is very specific. So as soon as they put these stipulations in there with regard to how our company defines harassment and discrimination, it's so broad, it applies to just about everything. So I tied that back to people creating a hostile workplace. And so in our handbook, it says, let me get it real quick. Some examples of prohibited actions include, but are not limited to, the following: making or using derogatory comments, epithets, slurs, slang phrases, nicknames, or jokes in verbal, written, or electronic communications about any individual, group, or employee. Verbal or physical contact that conduct that has the purpose or effect of creating an intimidating, hostile, or offensive work environment. So I would just suggest to anyone experiencing any challenges to tie it back to your employee, to noncompliance with your employee handbook, CDC guidelines. I tied in our county information, and then also the COVID workplace protocols with just regard to them being able to operate as a business. So I will update once I get a response or some feedback to this, and I will leave the line. Thank you.
Context of white supremacy, policy and procedure, extraordinarily important. We were almost done. Just going to leave it there. We had our audio segments to get off to a constructive start, hopefully. But there was one more report. We have generally quality participation from victims of racism in the Sunshine State. And then specifically, the race soldier in this report, I think it's Gina Brashear. She has on a huge University of Florida sweatshirt with the gator. You know how they do the Negro chomp, right? They had to make them stop doing the gator chomp thing. But she has that sweatshirt on in the midst of all of this. So I had to play it since we have folks who, lots of Cows listeners who are right down in Gatorland. So this is our one more segment for workplace racism. Safety for that. Our female victim of racism that we just heard was talking about one component of workplace safety. This is a totally different aspect of workplace safety, context of white supremacy.
Lee County woman you first saw on NBC2 spewing the N-word is doubling down.
It's called racism. It's real. It exists here. You found that out by speaking to me.
Only NBC2 brought you the story that's hard to listen to and watch last night at 11. Well, tonight, this racist rant is taking another turn. Thanks for watching. I'm Brenna Weick.
And I'm Peter Bush. Gina Brashear says she has no reason to be sorry. But now we're learning that someone else is paying for her words. NBC2's Gage Golding explains how a local veterinarian is taking the heat.
I can use the word oh, God, mother. Good, the cops are coming. Tell them I called y'all.
Gina Brashear verbally attacked Will Owsley and Melvin Finley on Saturday. It was all captured on cell phone video by a neighbor. The two brothers were unloading a semi-truck.
I was there, you know, to make some money. I was there to, you know, to to work.
Brashear unraveled the racist rant, saying the N-word six times in just 30 seconds. In a newly obtained 911 audio recording, we hear the neighbors call for help.
I had people helping me here, and she was calling them the N-word. I didn't know she wanted the truck moved. She just started yelling at me about my fence and how I don't have a permit for it. These guys are helping me. She called them the N-word a bunch of times.
After watching the video, people started calling Brashear's old veterinary office, Affordable Animal Care Clinic in Fort Myers.
Brashear's clinic has since closed. Now her racism is affecting another vet clinic, Homestead Veterinary Medical Center in Lehigh Acres.
First thing this morning when I came in, my phones were already ringing. Homestead Veterinary Medical Center.
That's because Homestead uses the phone number from Brashear's old clinic, but they want one thing to be clear.
No affiliation whatsoever. We do not in any way, shape, or form affiliate with that clinic.
Again today, Brashear refused to speak with me on camera, but she did say this about her old business.
Did I hide my racism at my business? As a professional, guess what? You have to not show those sides when you own the business.
Brashear continuing to stand behind, repeatedly calling Owsley and Finley the N-word.
To finally get someone to come out and go, I'm a racist, I am sorry for what I said. That will never come out of my mouth. Ever. Never.
In Lee County, Gage Golding, NBC2.
Video was startling enough, and then just to see this, you know, next part of the story tonight is even more startling.
I have thought about that story for 24 hours now, since we did it last night at 11 o'clock.
It's hard to forget.
I knew there were racist people out there. It's just still stunning to me to see someone so openly, unapologetically racist.
Yeah, and the story does not end here.
Nope. What she said is undoubtedly hateful. So could she be facing a hate crime? Well, NBC2 took that question to the experts, and you will hear what they say in about 12 minutes.
Let's get to
in that Hall of Fame, Gina Brashear. In that Hall of Fame, Florida, man, we all got to make a field trip back to Florida. Maybe we need to have, once the Rona is done, we can make an annual field trip, do a cow's retreat or something in Florida. Because, I mean, wow. Remember, I put the photo up from the cow's retreat last year. Florida crackers bragged about it. We keep the boys, gals, cows, we keep them in line in the Sunshine State. Gina Brashear said, you came to the wrong place thinking you're going to get an apology. Racism is alive and well, and you know it because you talk to me. Even that's the second time I just said Congresswoman Maxine Waters, she did the outcast at the election. Remember, she said, I will never, never, ever forgive a black male who votes for President Trump. Then Ms. Brashear, she did the same thing. I will never, never, ever apologize, call them niggers, being a racist. I wish. I wish. And then she gave the refinement. She even slowed it down. You have to hide your racism when you own a business. You wait till after business hours. Then you can talk about the Negro. Hall of Fame, Gina Brashear. And even then, they weren't calling her racist. They said hateful. No, 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 no. This is the spirit that terrorized the Capitol. It's the exact same thing. What? These Negroes are out here blocking my drive? This is one. Now, if it had been white workers, not looters, not out stealing mailboxes, not out raping white women. If this had just been a pair of white guys delivering packages, right, for a different neighbor, what have you, I guarantee it would not have been, you crackers, you bums, get the hell out of here and all this filth, foreign. I don't think so. I think she would have shown some couth and went and asked them like normal white people respond. Excuse me, buddy. I'd like to get out of my driveway. Could you please not block the drive? Thank you kindly. And went back to her house. Now, I know sometimes white people are rude with other white people. Absolutely. I'm aware of that. But I would I would wager, I don't think Ms. Brashear would have conducted herself in the same manner. I think we would have seen a lot more professionalism, couth antics in resolving this matter. The victims in this case, Will Owsley, Melvin Finley, there have been so many of these type of incidents just since the Rona invaded the North America, the U.S. in February of last year, about the last 11 months. It's been so many of these. I know we have Cal's listeners who are delivery workers, males, females, all different, you know, types of delivering products and things. And then in different regions, we had said because it was happening almost weekly, it seemed, for a while. We had talked about you need to have a code. I'd sit and you come out. Miss Brashear is out yelling, cursing, nigger, get that truck out of here. I'll kill you. The F are you doing? Nigger, get out of here right now. This is my drive, nigger. I am of the opinion. Now, we just heard Christopher Darden. What did he say? He said that you put the pile driver on her right now. You put the DDT, bionic elbow. You go. I am of the opinion that will make things way worse. This is the land of Claude Neal. Remember, we just talked about Claude Neal in Florida. They lynched. Well, during the lynching, they made him eat his own penis. Remember that one? And I think that might have been a work dispute. He said he wasn't being paid correctly. But Florida, they know how to deal with, you know, sassy niggers. I'm of the opinion you don't start, you know, shaking your finger in Miss Brashear's face and you don't talk that way to me. And who do you think you are? And if you see a nigger, you smacking it. Once that starts, I'm of the opinion you get in the vehicle immediately. She might have a gun. I don't. Is Florida open carry? That's George Zimmerman, right? She might have a firearm. Her husband, I think she was at home. So, I mean, who knows what she's got in her residence. Get in the vehicle. We had a whole protocol. This is just what I'm saying. If you have a better code, strategy for dealing with this, let's hear it and or just make sure you implement it and practice. You already know what to do, but I'm of the opinion you get in your vehicle, you lock the door. If you want to move the vehicle or whatever, that's fine. But the important thing, minimizing distance, you have much more control over your safety. In my opinion, you get in that vehicle, turn the keys in the ignition so that if you need to, you know, get away from there, get more distance, get to safety, you can do that. Windows are rolled up. You lock, secure the vehicle from the inside. I said you call the police. You call your employer. I'm of the opinion you do it in that order. Now, some people, it might be switched. You call your employer first. Maybe that's a part of their code, whatever. I'm of the opinion once it's got to this level, I am fearful for my safety. I don't know what she's going to do once it's got to this point. I don't know who this person is. This is a random stranger who is attacking me. I feel unsafe. I need assistance. That's exactly how it'd be reported. I am not safe. I am being threatened by this white woman. I don't know if she has a weapon, and I would include that too. Once it's a nigger this and what are you doing? And then effing people. I don't know if she has a weapon. I am fearful. I have been threatened. I do not feel safe. I need assistance immediately. I would report it to my employer and let them know. If they want, you know, just leave immediately. Call the police and let them. I called the police because I felt unsafe and threatened. If they want you to leave, no problem. Let's leave out of here immediately. I might not even tell the white person that's there. I can call and let them know that I was threatened by your neighbor. I called the enforcement officer, enforcement officials. I called my employer and they told me to exit. We're gone. We're 5 miles down the road. We'll figure out, you know, what to do. But apparently you have some very hostile, racist neighbors. And they probably know this. They live with this Brashear woman. They know her. I'm sure this is not the first time. Particularly what you heard. I'm not apologizing. Never. Never. They know her. She's not some stranger. They probably been living with her for years. Jesus Christ. I wanted these niggers to drop my products off. Fussing at my niggers, Lord. That's the type of thing. So have a code. If you are a delivery person, you any component of your job. I know we have some folks who work with U.S. Postal Office. Any component of your job requires you to, even if you do maintenance and that sort of thing. I know we have some folks where you might have to be there for like utilities, you know, Wi-Fi, computer installation, that type of thing. Have a code. You get there and any of their neighbors, because it's happened so many times. You're blocking the driveway. What are you doing here? We don't have niggers in this area. Why are you here? Are you raping someone? That sort of thing. I am all about no, same thing I've been saying at the end of the program. It's no verbal confrontation. There's no, in my view, there's no win. You're not putting a random white person in their place. You are in danger. That's the way you should think about it. Like, whoa, I am confronting a white terrorist and I'm confronting them in their home, basically. All he has to do is, you don't know what Brashear has in her house. Who she could have, her dad could be there. Her husband could be there. She could have 5, 10, 12 grown children. You have no idea. No confrontation. And they didn't do that. I'm just saying, have a code about what's the best way, the safest way to neutralize this type of situation. Neutralizing workplace racism. Number is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943 pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Email untiljustice@gmail.com. UntilJustice@gmail.com. You can anonymously write in your thoughts, suggestions. If you have a code, if you do delivery work and you have figured out a way to keep yourself safe, let us know. UntilJustice@gmail.com. Again, this broadcast not for spectators. Dial in, share, if particularly if you have figured out some strategies to help make sure that you are safe with regards to COVID-19, with regards to racists in your work environment or any of the other problems that we deal with. That is the type of constructive information that we need. So please share. 720-716-7300. The code 564-943 pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. The audio segments that we heard before Miss Brashear in Florida, we heard one of our Cows listeners, female victim of racism, brilliant report that she wrote to address the flagrant violations in the workplace. She was talking about people mocking the COVID-19 protocols and what have you, feigning ignorance about the protocols and passive aggressive intimidation of workers who are attempting to maintain a safe environment and explicitly using policy and procedure to demonstrate how these are all flagrant violations. And sometimes it's flagrant insubordination in terms of disregarding policy and procedure in the workplace. Love it. That's why I say check the policy and procedure and then just ask questions. Are these the rules that we're all supposed to be abiding by? Have them explain. And I think she said that was in a written email, which is spectacular. That is the best. Now you have a date, time stamped correspondence with your questions, resolution to this matter, and reporting flagrant insubordination and violation of policy and procedure. This should be addressed immediately, post haste. Workplace safety is in jeopardy. How much do we care about that? Love it. Folks can give us the update on that sort of thing. But I've said, snitch. If this sort of thing is happening in your workplace, value your health and safety, snitch. And see if it helps. Some folks have said that they have got positive results from this sort of behavior. They talked a lot about the virtual office place. I have no idea if anyone here is having to endure all of that and hanging out. I know we did have some people who were talking about the kind of virtual holiday parties and such. They talked about that a little bit in the clip too. I don't know if anybody is having to participate in all that. Wow, it sounds a little painful, but I codify everything. So I guess it would be some of the same rules in terms of what you talk about, what you don't talk about, how long you participate in that environment. I would not be intoxicated. It would not be a party just because it seems they talked a lot about the video game experience in all of this. Just because you're hanging out here and it seems just like leisurely fun time, this is not a video game. This is work. So I would behave that way. And really, it would just be we're talking about workplace things. I'm not going to be hanging out and, you know, let's talk about let me hear what you got for Christmas. Let me hear about your marital problems. And, oh, you're thinking about a threesome. Like, are you serious? Workplace topics only, even while we hang out in the virtual water cooler space. Heavens. The initial segment was talking about best ways to respond in interviews. I know that's something that we've talked about as well, and trying to convey some level of passion for doing this specific job that you are interviewing for might work out. I'm not sure. I think that strategy would probably be a little bit more effective for white people. He talked about his personal experience in getting a job where he exuded that sort of passion. And he got a job where he felt like the other candidates were more qualified. I don't know if they were non-white people or white people, but I have seen where white people, just on the basis of their passion, rhetoric, deception, are able to get jobs where they are not qualified, or at least are not the most qualified candidate. I'm not sure how that would work out, just in making sure that you exude specific passion for the job that you are trying to get. Maybe, but folks can apply and see what they think. Let's see. I have two things, several folks wrote in, so we'll get all of the written reports. And then also, Gus T taught some yoga this morning virtually, which was pretty cool. We had all black students. We did just about an hour of moving around. It was pretty early. At least for me, it was early. It was 6 a.m. Seattle time. So I think the sun was not up yet. So I think anytime you are moving and it's still dark outside, that is pretty early. But it was very constructive. I thought I'm always excited about sharing yoga with other black people for workplace racism. At least all of this even came about. Dr. Ruby Lathan, she's been on the program many times, and she's been doing her cooking classes and things and trying to promote health and fitness, wellness for a long, long time. She's in the documentary film, What the Hell. She's been on the program a bunch. And she was supposed to be in Portland, I think in October, sometime in like the autumn of 2020, the Rona. That didn't happen, but I was supposed to come down and teach in Portland. That was how we had corresponded to begin with. In fact, she called me and I was stunned, like, oh my God, is somebody calling to name call or what is going on? Because I didn't even recognize the number. And then I answered, I was like, oh, Dr. Lathan. Oh, okay, it's not someone to name call and that sort of thing. It's like, yoga, let's do some yoga, blah, blah, blah. And so we talked about it. Then I thought for a minute, and like, I don't remember. So it's going to be, how did you get my number, Dr. Lathan? Like, what is going on here? And then I stopped and was like, oh, yeah, I had to give her my resume for the Portland thing. And my number is on my yoga resume. So all of that to say, there is a benefit to having accurate current information on your resume, which we talked about a bunch. And then for things that you want to do to further your career, share so that people can reach out and get in touch with you. But keep that resume polished, updated, and share for things that you want to do to further your career, You never know what opportunities and things will be there, but was awesome. I observed all of the rules that we've talked about. If you're going to do some sort of Zoom or virtual conference, I made sure to have a neutral plain wall with no, you know, images, posters, nothing, just, you know, plain wall. In fact, actually, I did have my bookshelf, one of my bookshelves in the background, which I would not have done if this had been, you know, if let's say I was teaching random people that I did not know. There might be some white people, or even if it was just random, you know, non-white people, not connected to anything like that, I probably would cover the books. I would not be saying, oh, yes, let me show off my, you know, copy of Yorugu and pieces of a puzzle and the code book and Dr. Camp, like, no, not at all. Let's cover all that up. And yes, that'll just put a sheet there or a pillow or whatever you need to cover it up. But I observed all the rules that we talked about with the virtual space, which I would say, you know, have a code about that too. But was grand to be able to do a little bit of yoga with some other black people and share health, fitness, whoopee, keep the resume updated. All right, let's see. With the emails, we have a bunch. I will get through as many of them as we can. Goal will be to get through them all. Number one. Good evening, Gus. Recently at work, I lost a non-white black male coworker from complications of COVID-19. Many of the white upper brass of management came to the office, gave speeches and talks to the rest of the employees, all while saying, referring to this victim by his nickname instead of his full name. I'm just pausing because I think the female victim, I read her audio or just played the audio report when she shared with us last week about the written report that she filed about the violations and all of that. Within that report, the policy and procedure in her workplace, it stipulated calling employees by titles other than their name, nicknames, and all the rest of it was there as a form of workplace intimidation and harassment. We've talked about this so consistently over the years, not calling black people in the workplace by their proper title, all these nicknames and everything, misspellings of the name. That's why we say consistently, always, if it's an email and they're not spelling your name correctly, or they're making up some little, you know, name, and always it's so tacky. They'll come, and we've had people will say that your nickname is pimping. We work at a law firm. Everyone else, Miss Brashear, Mr. Dershowitz, Mr. Shapiro, me. What's up, pimpin'? This victim in death can't even get my name. I got to get some old Cookie. We loved Cookie. Didn't we love Cookie? He was the best. We love our boys and gals around here, and Cookie was one of our best boys. It, even in death, it does not get any better than tacky. Continuing. At the same time, mentioning they've never had the pleasure of meeting him, they came to the office, gave speeches and talks to the rest of the employees, all while referring to this victim by his nickname instead of his full name. At the same time, mentioning they've never had the pleasure of meeting him, but they still constantly refer to him by his nickname. I need my sound effect to finish this. I didn't know how tacky this was, but it just gets worse as we keep going. Let me get my sound effect up for this one so we can do it proper. All right, let's see. At the same time, mentioning they've never had the pleasure of meeting him, but they're still constantly referring to him by his nickname. They also refer to the victim as a brother.
Black brother. Black brother of hell.
And a family member. grief counselors were made available. Also, coworkers were called upon to recall the good memories about the victim. I guess they said they didn't know him, so they can make up some names and titles and experiences that they had with this victim. Remember the time we got fried chicken together? Man, I loved Cookie. Then the very next day, oh my God, come on, I thought they were really going to have fried chicken. Then the very next day, there were donuts and coffee for the office on the main table in the office. I mentioned to the supervisor, being that we just lost a brother,
Like brother hell.
Family member, and COVID cases are spiking. Do you think that it's a good idea to be having spreads of donuts and coffee for the office? His response was, I agree with you. I'm not going anywhere near it. Now, wait. Wait a minute. I thought, don't they have those tacky signs? Is that just the Seattle thing? They have like billboards and commercials that play here that say, we're all in this together. Haven't y'all seen that? Is that just the Seattle thing? We're all in this together. We're going to beat this Rona thing. We're united and we're going to get by this thing. We just got to stick in and hang together. Haven't they said that sort of rhetoric the whole time? And in fact, even before the Rona, in the workplace, don't they say, they said, we just lost a brother. I thought we were a family. Like, if it's a family, if it's a poison sandwich in the refrigerator, I'm not going near it. my wife and children fend for themselves. I'm not going anywhere. Y'all have fun. Hope you make smart choices when you get to the kitchen. I don't think that's how most people function with their family. He raises a legitimate health concern. Hey, we just had a brother pass away. They have had recommendations to avoid this sort of thing. Potlucks, and we're all going to come in and fondle all over the donuts and get powdered sugar everywhere and eat them up and lick our fingers and things. Like, maybe we don't need to do that. Oh, that's a good idea. Let's go clear all this out. That's not a good idea. Maybe we can figure out a way to individually wrap donuts if we really got to do this, put them in a Ziploc bag, get it sanitized and everything. So, and disperse it some other way so that we're not contaminating. No, it's just, I'm looking out for self, whatever. I'll catch you later, bro. Like, what in the world? The main point should be, another one of our recommendations that is way pre-Rona, do not eat in the workplace. Even once the Rona is conquered, if that day ever comes, we still, it's not going to be hoorah, now I can go pig out for donut day. We still got racism, white supremacy, I'm good. Hopefully, if we are gainfully employed, we get enough nickels that we are not dependent on donut day at the job for sustenance. There are about a billion reasons. The Rona just makes it like a billion one reasons to never, and I mean, let me borrow Ms. Brashear, never, ever consume products in the workplace. In fact, I'll borrow the fire department. That'll be the one. I don't need Ms. Brashear or anything else. I'll take the fire department. When the fire department has to make public service announcements for their own employees to encourage them not to urinate on other firefighters' wardrobe and beverages, and you work at the fire department, this isn't McDonald's. I expect them to urinate in the lettuce. This is the fire department, and they have a problem. And apparently this is not a one person thing. I don't think you need to make a whole commercial for one employee who's doing this. So apparently this is widespread enough at the fire department. As I said, the Rona just makes it a billion and one reasons. I don't care what happens. No for donut day, no for pizza day, peanut M&M day. If they come up with organic salad day, I'm good. Gus, we know you love organic smoothies. We hooked it up. We got everything you love. We got the organic spinach, the macadamia nut milk. We got the beets, the carrots. I know you love that frozen watermelon. Coons in the watermelon. We got frozen watermelon for you. Oh, I'm fasting today. Never, ever eating in the workplace. Even if you forgot your lunch, tough nookies. Borrow some money. If you got a non-white person there, borrow some money. If you have to go out and get whatever to survive until you get home. But it is never cool to be eating from what? Even if I worked with all victims, I am cool. There's no reason for me to assume we are all brothers just because no one here is classified as white. Now it's time to eat. Number again, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943, pound, press star 61 if you would like to participate. Untiljustice@gmail.com if you have want to email your response. I do just want to say before I move on, like, man, that... My condolences, the victim that lost a coworker, his family and folks, that is super serious. I didn't even get to, you know, the gravity of losing someone because it was so tacky. The way that the white employees responded to the loss of one of their colleagues that they didn't even make time to hang out with or even know this person. They get to come in and make up some memories about him. If anything, another reminder, take all of this seriously. Try not to be lax in terms of safety in the workplace. If you work around people like what our female caller wrote about who are not taking it seriously and not wearing a mask and kind of picking on you, mocking you if you are wearing a mask and trying to distance and you don't want to come in and eat the donuts that everybody has pawed all over. So what? Take it seriously. There are enough reasons to take it super serious, at least for the time being. Let's see, folks who dialed in star 61, if you have comments, suggestions based on what you heard, particularly the delivery aspect. Again, if folks have a code about that, take it serious. If you have any of your own incidents you would like feedback, hopefully we can offer a constructive thought or two, feel free. First few folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open.
Hello.
Irie in Louisiana. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
All right. Hi. Hotep. Greetings. Gonna make it quick. I don't know, Gus, if you're still looking for children to interview or, you know, ask questions about their school experience. I have two children that I know, some friends, they live in the Midwest. We were talking about their kids and being in school, and I inquired with my friend to see if maybe her son might be interested in answering some questions for you because he's a very sociable child. He's very gifted in IT as well, so he's been implementing skills that he taught himself during the pandemic, you know, despite not being in school and everything. So he said he would want to ask questions, and I think he's fifth grade. And then there was another child. His friend was, he told his friend. His friend also wanted to answer questions, and I talked to him briefly over the phone, and he was saying that, you know, he wants to be a musician and stuff. And I asked him how school was affecting it, and we talked about it a little, but he said he would want to, wouldn't mind participating. If you're still looking for that, pardon me, I'm running off because I'm trying to keep my thoughts together. There was a couple other things from a workplace racism call a while back I wanted to share real quick. One is when you use hand sanitizer and stuff, and alcohol. I don't know because I'm not a scientist and a biologist, but I think it's only so much that you can do that to your person with before it takes no effect at all, or can cause what they call in biology that population explosion. I know working in healthcare with hand sanitizer, you only can use it 2 times and then you have to wash your hands. So if that's the case, I'm also wondering how often spraying yourself, like your clothes or your other gear, would be effective if you do it over and over and don't actually, like, maybe wipe it down. Or, in other words, I'm trying to say, I think there's some research due on, you know, how often you can sanitize with alcohol, like clothes and surfaces, before it actually backfires. And I know people don't want to get sick, and I don't want to get sick either, so I always make sure I don't overuse alcohol and antibacterial products, so I don't, you know, catch anything. And then the other thing, I purchased, my partner and I, we both purchased a mask that is manufactured in China, but someone, I guess, has authorization or they're a seller in America because it came really quick. But I ordered this mask called the Atmo Blue off of Indiegogo from a campaign. And the Atmo Blue is a bi-chambered HEPA filter. So just like it almost looks like a modified gas mask, I'll be honest, but it has a 3-speed fan in there, has a HEPA filter that filters out 99.9 microbes and particulates. They even said something on their Facebook page, like if you were even, say, for instance, in a fire situation and there was smoke, it would be able to process cleanly that smoke, you know, up to a certain type, you know, thickness of smoke, but you could get out of a place, a smoking situation, even with the mask. That's how well it worked. It's $100 per mask, and then they sell the filters to the side. So I don't know how much shipping will be, for one, because we ordered enough for ourselves and the progeny, 4 of them. And so 4 masks and filters, a couple other accessories, was like $60 for shipping. But the shipping was really fast. We thought it was going to be slow because the manufacturer's in China. But again, someone in America must be housing it because it came really quick. I'm very happy with it. I've been working out with it. It's great. And I just wanted to make that recommendation for people that want to do more than just wear the standard little facial mask that everybody has. So thank you. And have a great night. Hotel.
Much obliged, Irie in Louisiana. Awesome. I'm definitely still interested in hearing from some younger victims of racism, how all of this, because I mean, we're a year on, right, like into all of this. So yeah, how this has impacted their academic development, what they're feeling about all of this, and, you know, having to hang out on Zoom, or what, I don't even know if they're having to hang out on Zoom or some virtual platform for their schoolwork and kicking it. Absolutely. So I will connect via email. We'll chat it up and all that. So much obliged for the help. And yeah, we had talked about that before. People were talking about different mask options. The female caller who made the report, she was talking about that, switching up, and because I think she was saying that they had switched to a different type of mask that they were providing in the workplace. So I know some folks, that's something that they're still dealing with and trying to get info on as well, for the mask situation in the workplace. Much obliged for sharing that as well. Let's see, before I nab our next caller, I'll nab one more email really quick. Let's see. Oh, okay, here we go. Black female, victim of racism. She writes in, I just feel like I need to get the workplace racism clarification and monoclonal antibody treatments are also accessible for South Florida COVID-19 patients. She writes, I wrote last week. I wrote last week about COVID vaccines being made available to to Broward Public School employees over 65. I included the official memo and press release from the school board. At this time, I have not taken the vaccine, and the district is still taking the position that it is optional but encouraged. I decided a while back that I would take the vaccine only if it was mandatory for me to sustain employment or function normally in society. I am not over 65, and I don't have comorbidities as far as I know, and my decision might be different if I was in those categories. The caller from Toronto correctly spoke about union stewards last week. However, in Florida, unions are more symbolic or only useful as bargaining units because this is a right-to-work state. This hampers the effectiveness of Florida unions. In fact, Broward Teachers Union lost a recent effort to allow workers with health conditions to continue to work from home with accommodations. The options are to return face-to-face or take a leave. There are four types of leave, and none of them are paid unless someone uses sick time, paid time off, if they have any. Listening to your Global Sunday Talk, that was about 10 days ago. Not last week, the weekend before last. Listening to your Global Sunday Talk, the caller from Sweden sounded like he could be in Florida. COVID is an issue, but it's not an issue either. Oh, he was saying now in Sweden, they didn't do all the major lockdowns. Now, he did say in Sweden that they did slowly start to adjust some of the, you have to wear masks like on public transit during like the heavy transit hour, like at 5 or 6 when people are going to work. But I mean, it's still pretty lax in Sweden for the most part. Anyway, Governor DeSantis's point of view to open everything up is evident locally. Florida is a state focused on recreation and commerce above all. Disney World rules all. Below is an article about how antibody treatments from WLRN, news outlet in Florida. On a side note, the Miami Heat is said to be the first NBA team to try using COVID sniffing canines to screen season ticket holders to the American Airline Arena for future home games. I wanted to say white dog, but Rona sniffing canines. Wow. Technology. It is 2021. Much obliged. The email again, untiljustice@gmail.com. I'm not sure if I would, is going to the basketball game that important that I have to be fondled by a Rona sniffing canine? I don't think the Heat are that good. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up. Line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Good evening, Gus. Good evening, all the callers and listeners. This is Coach Weiss, software developer. I just wanted to address something that I heard last week. I guess someone called in and was asking about how you would deal with other non-white people in a predominantly white workspace who act one way with you when there are no white people around and then act totally different when there are white people around. So as a software engineer, I've had that experience of working in predominantly white spaces with other non-white people. And there's been a couple of things I've noticed. One, I think oftentimes we as non-white people, we code switch, as they say, and we do this very subconsciously. And other times white people are sort of amping these non-white people up to do the things to mistreat you or what have you, what Mr. Fuller called racial shadow boxing. So, you know, I think that the best thing you can do is minimize conflict by minimizing contact, right? So not really, you know, saying hi, bye, being cordial, being respectful, but not really engaging in a lot of conversation, just so, for your own protection and for the protection of that non-white person. You don't want to have it escalate into conflict and then both of you are in trouble. You really don't want that. So that would be my suggestion for that. I have a couple of anecdotes from this week. So first of all, actually this just happened today and I thought this was so funny. I thought of you, Gus, when this happened to me. So I work remotely and every morning at 9 a.m. we have a meeting on Zoom to discuss what work we've done. And this white male gets on the meeting, and I've talked about this white male before. He's a part of the people of color employee resource group for some reason. So he gets on the call, and he's like, "What up, my homie?" And I'm like, "Oh, okay." I said, "Are we homies?" He said, "I don't know." I said, "Oh, okay. Well, good morning, sir." He said, "Wow, that was much more formal than I was." I said, "I know." And I left it at that. So that was bad. Really doesn't get any better than tacky. But so this week I had, this week there was an extreme case of racial showcasing at my job. So the company that I work for has named two people to its board, one of whom is a non-white, a black female, actually. And she's pretty on point and everything else. And so they decided that they would have, the women's group at the job I work at, and the people of color group decided to bring her for a discussion on Tuesday. So they had a non-white, non-black female who worked for legal moderating this. And it was really interesting because, you know, this non-white female wanted to talk to her about, you know, well, what is it like, you know, how do you get to this level of executive, you know, this executive level as a black woman? And, you know, what were the things that you learned and how did you do this? And, you know, the board member just kept on blowing that off. And she would make reference, like anytime she made reference to, I guess, anything racial, or, you know, sometimes people throw, you know, gender in there as well. You know, she kept on referring to her demographic. So she would say, well, it could be, you know, because of my demographic, or it could be something else, you know. And I was just like, why doesn't she? I mean, because it was clear the non-white person who was moderating was asking these questions pointedly, like, wow, you know, you're a black woman and you've done all this and it's so fabulous. Can you tell us about that? And she just kept on blowing it off. It was hilarious. And I thought she would like this, Gus. She said the last book that she read was Cast by Isabel Wilkerson. And when she talked about, you know, the problems that she had, I mean, like you said, she talked about it as like, oh, it's my, you know, maybe it was a part of my demographic or whatever. But she would always think about white men as the problem. And she had this assumption of ignorance from white people. So I thought that was really interesting. I went because I wanted to see what type of black person, and I hate to say it like that, but I mean, really, like how white identified this black person is if she's made it to this place, right? She's a high level executive at another company. Now she's on a board at this company. You know, so I really wanted to see it. And she was pretty white identified. The husband, I believe, was white. And she said they were trying to go to Croatia for his 40th birthday. I assume that the husband was white. And it was interesting. It was just very, very interesting. Yes, thank you. All right. So that's all I have this evening. Sorry for rambling on. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Much obliged, codified software developer. Good memory that did come up. I think it was just last week. We had a female caller who dialed in who was talking about that, having a black coworker who, I guess they're cool. She's courteous or friendly to some degree, I guess, when they're alone or they're no other, or at least there's no one else classified as white present. And then once the white coworkers arrive, then she completely changes her behavior. We were kind of talking about that previously. She was asking for suggestions, and I think absolutely minimizing contact and just keeping it courteous, but it's not too involved. We're not looking for or having like really in-depth, lengthy conversations. This is not my sister. This is not my brother. We just keep it very short, focused on the workplace, cordial, professional. But I mean, hey, this is not my homie, you know, not at all in terms of how we're working. This is just another victim of racism. I'm just trying to get through the day without mistreating her. Hopefully she won't mistreat me. But yeah, we're not homies or tag team partners, anything like that. The research, doing recon, when they have these type of events in the workplace, I think it is best not to think that these type of meetings, or if they bring in a speaker or something, this is not authentically about addressing racism. They might not even use the word racism. That's not what this is about. You can go and just conduct research on who is here, what words are being used, as she said, how white identified are the victims that they're going to allow to participate in all of this. And then how are we going to even talk about racism? Is this just going to be that white people are ignorant? Excuse me, that white men are ignorant and are exclusively to blame for racism? Like, if we're just going to have some sort of nonsense type, you know, of dialogue about all of this, got it. Not even, unless I'm here just for research purposes, I'm not even going to invest too much time and energy in these projects. A lot of times they'll try and rope you into it too. Like, oh man, codified software developer, you're so brilliant. Why don't you join our group here and give us some of your suggestions, and just waste more of your time and energy, not solving a single problem, just meeting here and meeting there and nonsense. You know, it's more wasting time. They come out and say, oh my goodness, my favorite book is Cased, which is another cow. That should have been a double whammy there. That's two cowbells right there. And we're not even in that book. We're not even seriously about talking about the problem. She's talking about Jane Elliott, and you know, we can't even call someone. We got dominant Cased members and all the rest. So just recon, even with the literature that's being recommended and how we address this problem. And then they round the whole thing out with the tackiness. Didn't I just say that? They come in with everyone else, sir, ma'am, calling folks by their name, non-white people. What's up, my homies? My peeps was cracking this morning. Sir? Really? That's how we're... Even if it's all white people and they do that sort of thing, even that sticks out. Like, are you this is our time, our kind of blackface, mock black people time? Because they do that too. Like, all manifestation of that doesn't get any better than tacky. I love it. Not falling into it even a little bit. Excuse me, sir? Good to see you too, Mr. Robinson. Let's get busy. What? That was so formal. Yes. Let's get busy. Like, what in the world? What in the world? What? I thought my peeps was, we were going to, you not know, no Negro slang. No. Like, we've had people before who said, when they were more confused about racism, they would do this, because they would have some white people, they would come in and it would be like a whole production. They would want to do the fist bump and, you know, make up all these names and what's cracking and all that stuff. Then once the non-white person, once they got a little less confused and they stopped doing that, oh my goodness. They said it was like the white person seemed so disgruntled and bent out. It's like, man, we're not going to do the Black Power fist bump anymore and do our morning homies and peeps and Rona, man. Can't do all that, Rona. Let's see. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Other folks, if you have a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Hi, guys.
Be in Toronto.
Hi, greetings to you, callers and listeners. There were a couple of things that came across this week that I would like to report. The first was in regards to training on documentation skills that I had participated in via Zoom meeting. And what was really interesting is there was definite emphasis on everyone showing their face instead of their avatars. And those that did show their face, well, there was one particular white female that was, I'm not quite sure what she was doing with the tweezers, but she was, I guess, plucking extra hairs from underneath her chin as the training went on. It was terribly distracting. And she had a big mirror, like one of those big handheld circular mirrors, and was literally plucking from underneath her chin. Those Zoom trainings, meetings can be very interesting. However, from the documentation training, one of the key things to take away is if it's not documented, it didn't happen. So you want to make sure, regardless of which industry that you're in, that if there is, harassment, racial harassment that has been done against you, you make sure you document it. I know that for direct care workers in particular, in their training sessions, they're told to just sit by and really ignore it, and because those who individuals that they are working with may just say racist things just to say them. Nope, you document it in your case notes. You document it in your incident reports. Document, document, document. Because again, if you haven't done it. If you haven't written it down, it didn't happen, and you definitely want a paper trail. It's quite pleasing to hear the letter that one of the callers or writers had sent through their workplace, documenting the instances or incidents that have occurred. Just for wearing a mask for those who are following the protocols, and how they are being in a hostile environment. So it's excellent that was done. Another thing to keep in mind is to ensure that you, as soon as it happens, find a way to do a date and time stamp on it, because the longer the time period, If for some reason your notes get submitted to the courts and you have to speak to it, then it can be questioned, or that evidence can be thrown out if there is a huge gap of time between the incident that occurred and when it was documented. So be sure to make sure that you document as soon as possible and date and timestamp it so that it reflects that you've documented as soon as possible that incident. Also, the other thing, too, was the the information on the vaccine. So I got some notes here regarding it. Just bear with me for, all right, here it is. In terms of the vaccine, there's, for the current vaccine that they're providing, it's a two-dose vaccine. Between the first dose and the second dose cannot elapse over 42 days. Or the vaccine is less effective, so it has to the vaccine dose has to be given 42 days or under. Beyond 42 days, it's undetermined as to whether or not it would be effective. There are some that some people will still get sick from the vaccine. Some people will still get sick from the COVID, even after having the vaccine. So for those who have received the vaccine, if you're still experiencing any new coughing or having trouble breathing, still seek the medical care to ensure that, that can be looked into. In terms of how long the COVID immunization will last and how often one would need to be vaccinated, the current vaccine is designed for two doses only, and the COVID's only existed for over a year. So since there are new variant strains of the COVID, it's undetermined right now whether you will require a booster shot for future vaccines, or if you're going to require a different vaccine altogether for the new strain. I also had a chance to speak to someone who actually got vaccinated. She got her second dose last week. This week. Earlier this week, she got her second dose. What she had told me, she's actually my neighbor, what she had told me was that for those who got vaccinated, make sure that you take either a Tylenol or an ibuprofen just prior to having taken the vaccine, and that for herself, she experienced like very strong flu-like symptoms for the first 3 days, but then it disappeared. And the flu-like symptoms were coughing, fever, sweat, slight aches and pains around the joints and muscles. But then that had went away. But keep in mind that everybody's different. So everyone would be affected in different ways if you choose to take the vaccine. Thank you, and I leave the line.
Much obliged, B in Toronto. That's one thing I encourage. I think that was a codified software developer spoke to maybe doing recon, do a little research on some of the other programs or things that happen in your workplace. Always, I'm about getting more information. Same thing with the Rona. I am still learning. I think most of us are still learning, trying to figure out the best way to proceed with all this. So if it's coworkers, neighbors, friends, family members, if they get the vaccine, to ask questions, that's what I've done. People that, Cal's listeners, I've encouraged them right in. We've heard from folks who got the vaccine. Some of the folks explained the type of job situation that they're in, motivated their decision. But let's try to get information. The folks who are going to do it, that can help us, you know, grasp if this is something that we want to do, yay or nay. We had, you know, folks write in about that already, saying that they were not going to do it unless they absolutely had to do it. It was mandatory for their job type of a thing. So just try to get as much info details as possible, keeping being mindful about any policy and procedure changes in your workplace and or any data about the vaccine or what have you. But just learn, recon, research, just so that we can all try to make the best decisions that we can for ourselves, relatives, folks that we, you know, are concerned about. Let's see. Much obliged. Be in Toronto. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Our Bay Area mom, yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. Greetings to everyone on the line. Workplace racism. So, at my job, I work with the children on the spectrum. So I had a second supervised session at the home that never had a supervisor. And I was speaking about the young man that's doing the internet, the online school. So he's still not interested in school. I don't get a lot of help from the parents. It's basically just me trying to wrestle him into class. Well, it's not class. I was able to get the mom to transition him from the playroom doing online school into the kitchen area where everyone else seems to have laptops and work and school so forth. So he's still eloped. He still leaves, escapes. He still runs off. It's awful. And then when I have to take him and carry him back, and so he's fighting that. It's a lot. So I'm always trying to figure out different ways to have him do the classes, because I guess that's mandatory, but I can't get any of my work that I'm actually there for done. He's not interested in anything, and I think he connects me with forcing him to do school. So his mom will set it up or start the, well, she always started it because she has the password and stuff to the computer, but she immediately leaves and goes wherever she goes. She does work from home, and she is on the phone. I guess during the hours that I'm there, she's supposed to be on the phone working. And she also has a teenage male on the spectrum, much more severe than the three-year-old, much more. And he has seizures and, oh, dear. So I try to do as much as I can, but I can't get any of my work done. He's definitely not interested after class. And then sometimes he's not even doing his morning class. I ask, what did the morning class consist of? And it's circle time. So I guess it's just whatever, reading books, and he's just sitting there looking at the computer. But when I'm there, the next session starts, and it's 35 minutes. And it's more intense, and it's three different teachers, and he doesn't like it. So yesterday I was able to just have him sit on my lap, and I just did a hand over hand with a lot of the stuff. He knows a lot of the stuff. He just doesn't want to be forced to do it like that. So he didn't run off today. Yesterday I just sat him in my lap, and every time he did what he was supposed to, I made him, yay, clap your hands. So But right after that, after school is over, he's not interested in anything that I have on my tablet. So I feel as if I'm the teacher's aide for the school that he goes to versus what my job consists of. So come to find out, the supervisor that I was speaking of, the Spanish-speaking supervisor that's not Black, she omitted all kinds of information that I need in order to record the session. She didn't go over anything. I have to figure it out literally on my own. So the other supervisor that's taking her place or taking some of her caseloads while she's on leave, she's just shaking her head because she couldn't believe that nobody's saying anything and no one's going over the material that I'm recording. None of the goals go with the child. I wasted a lot of time because the goals didn't pertain to the child because she never met the child, the supervisor that created the goals. So now here we are 6 months later. I'm doing the schooling with him online and he's not interested in anything. So I feel like I was set up for failure. I do feel like with the supervisors, they usually they're the ones in a higher position, so they're usually correct. So I'm normally replaceable. So I figured at some point I would be getting shifted off somewhere else. With the second child that I have, she's a supervisor as well, and the goals don't connect to the child. When she did do one home visit, she sat in the middle of the living room tapping on her computer, so she didn't she didn't do anything but say good job. So now this other supervisor that I was just speaking of, the younger Black lady, she's going to come on Monday and scare the daylights out of the child. I'm sure the child is going to scream all 2 hours because she doesn't know her and she has anxiety for strangers, and this is going to be something. I'm not going to get anything done. But I had to create what she was able to see maybe a couple of days ago. She overlapped via the tablet Zoom, and as she's asking me about the goal, she's able to see how I have to create different ways to get the child to do it because I have no material. And since the pandemic, we can't bring our own materials in the homes. With all this going on, I applied for another job in the company that's has nothing to do with going in and out of homes. I think the correspondence went in my spam. I checked my spam today. So I'd set an appointment for next week and we'll see, but I'm not going to be able to remain in this setting doing this with supervisors such as this trying to help me. The one that I have now is borrowed because she's only doing this while the lady's on leave. So afterwards, I think she comes back in March. I don't want to be a part of whatever she has going on. So I'm literally trying to transition out. The other supervisor I found out, the one, the Caucasian lady that had me back with the George Floyd moment, and the little boy had the police uniform, and he was going to arrest me with his whistle, the one that would punch me and hit me. She quit, so that's why the other lady has come in, the younger Black lady, because she ended up quitting this month. I just thought that was interesting as well. So Thank you for taking my call, and I'll mute my line.
Much obliged, Bay Area mom. I feel like we've heard, like, in talking about your work situation and working with these young children, like, black people so frequently in workplace settings, we are put in positions to fail. Like you've talked about in so many different settings where either you're coming in and you're supposed to have this, your supervisor is supposed to be there for this, you know, supervised type visit thing. And then she decides that she's not going to show up last minute. Like you've talked about not being able to even get your own programs together and what you're supposed to be doing because you're compensating and doing other things. Like it just seems so designed. And I mean, this is working with young children. This is not like wasting time again, working at McDonald's or what have you. Like the consequences of this work not being done well is, man, like these children who need the most help not getting it. That is, you know, standard operating procedure in the system of white supremacy. And I would say particularly in environments where it's black children, like super inept services all the way through, all the while white people can get all their credentials and brag about having years of serving underserved Negro children. I know a lot of black people, they get into these type of fields because they want to help. They want to be service providers, especially for black children. But you end up in these type of programs and service providers where you're not able to do that at all, and or you're greatly compromised in what you can do just because of the way it's set up. It's not designed to serve them and to provide them with the help that they need. So, yeah, I mean, just everything that we've heard about this situation, it sounds like it's just set up for you to fail and be frustrated with all of this perpetually. Like I would totally be, like I said at the top of the broadcast, updating the resume. I don't think this is, like, nothing about this seems like an environment or a job that I would want to stay in. Like a year from now, I'm still working in this environment, like just working with children who need lots of help and are not getting it at all. And you all, like the white people who run this program, you all know this and don't care at all. You all are just having fun, making money, and knowing that you're underserving and not serving these clients adequately at all. And then that she said having parents, because that's been a pattern too, where even the parents are not being helpful. Like they're taking advantage of this and just kind of dumping it off. So the child, like, and I've seen that where you have children where they don't really have a constructive academic experience. Maybe they missed time from school even before the Rona, so they haven't had that experience of being there daily consistently, so they didn't know what it's like, and they hate it. Like I'm accustomed to doing what I want, can watch television, play on the phone, play video games, all the rest, PS5. Now I got to sit here and do work, structured work that I don't even want to do. Like, oh, they hate, like I've seen that, and they can end up transferring that to the person like you, as opposed to having the parent be doing some of this and helping them kind of acclimate and get accustomed to the structure of doing schoolwork. It just all gets associated with you. So they take out all that frustration on you. Like, oh, you're the devil incarnate making me do this work, and I hate it. And let's just go watch. Like I've seen that, like, if just everything about it, I would be getting my resume updated. Like I need to get out, maybe even out of this company. Cause it seems like this level of unprofessionalism might travel company wide, but definitely at least out of the current type of work. Cause it just seems like it's going to be more of the same where it's unsafe and the going in the houses too, but at minimally not serving these children at all, which is just producing a lot of frustration, I suspect, for you and the children. I think everybody wants to feel like they're doing some work that's fruitful. You know, you're able to do something that's helping out people if that's what it's supposed to do. And to just know, like, man, I'm not even getting to goal number one, what I'm supposed to do with these childs and with these children, to have that be the case consistently. Like, yeah. If much obliged for sharing, our mom in the Bay Area, if folks have suggestions for her, or for any of the other folks who have tuned in to share, if you have your own situation, the number again is 720-716-7300. the code 564943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks who dialed in, if you have comments, observations to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Hey, Dust, I was just wondering on where in Florida is that lady Berkshire, I think the last name was, where she's located at?
Let's see. They have her listed in Lee Acres, Florida. I'm of the opinion, I think this is North Florida. I was thinking this is somewhere like Jacksonville. But I'm not, you know, buff. I haven't lived down there for decades. But I
never.
Okay, so I'm looking on the map now. Lee
Acres. I thought I heard the word homestead. Time.
So this is close.
I thought I heard homestead.
This is considered to be a part of the Cape Coral, Fort Myers, Florida region, if that makes it any, all of this seems to be, okay, so I can see the whole state now as to where all of this is. So this is all next to Cape Coral, Florida. Oh, so this is not North Florida. This is like West Florida. Okay, I did it. All of this is further south than Tampa. So this is like West Florida, like Southwest Florida, way west of Miami, but it is not North Florida at all. She just has on, I don't know why she's got the University of Florida on. She is way far from Jacksonville. So this is Fort Myers, Cape Coral, Bonita Springs, that part of the state.
Okay. Yeah. She has the last name that, for a white person that I haven't heard in a long time. So I kind of like figured that it wasn't down here in South Florida. Most of the white people down here has EZ or AZ at the end of their last name. So, but business as usual in the grand old state.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm sure she's a strong supporter of the great governor, Ron DeSantis, already mentioned in the broadcast as well. Let's see.
And the great senator. Former governor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Stronghold for our former president, for sure. Let's see. Other folks dialed in, if you have hand up, thoughts, observations to share, line should be open. Proceed. I'll get in another email. Folks get their observations, thoughts together. We had one of our female victims of white supremacy. She wrote in. Greetings. I am a victim of unjust networking. When someone is out, they are to evenly distribute their workload between two people who are assigned to them. I log in and see that I got the most work between me and another person. The person that was out has 9 cases that needed to be investigated. He sent us an email saying he evenly distributed his work, yet when I log in, I have 7 of his cases on top of my new ones. The 2 cases the other girl got are very easy because there's no work to be done. I believe possibly the person that was out and the other girl had a conversation the day before and strategically did this. I checked the schedule and C, she's working the same amount of hours as me, so she could have taken more of his cases to make it even. So I looked through the person who was out and see he did nothing yesterday while he was working. They like to virtually micromanage, so how did they miss this person not doing work for days because I checked his other cases and not saying anything, but they closely monitor my work and come for me anytime they don't understand anything. Now that right there, I think Mr. Fuller, when he talks about equal protection, equal enforcement of laws, which is so common in the workplace where black people are not treated the same way as white people in terms of they'll come and fuss at you. Did you dot this I? Did you put a period right here? Whereas this fella can sit here and not work all day, especially when they're supposed to have all kinds of mechanisms, even apps that they have on your computer in terms of performance and make sure people are not malingering and just watching YouTube videos, you know, all day long. That's not supposed to be happening in the virtual work environment. And I suspect for black people, it is not happening. They're going to, you know, be on the phone immediately. It looks like you're doing some slacking. But we've had so many listeners who have talked about this type of thing where they think there's some deliberate racist shenanigans with the allocation of work or assignment of actual hours or shifts. That's another really popular one where folks have said, man, it seems like there's some sort of unjust networking going on where the white people, regardless of seniority or whatever else, they're getting the really nice shifts. And we just get the really, you know, messed up schedules, moved all around, got to work the graveyard shift, as they say. So I suspect it is very common. It would not surprise me at all, even if it was coordinated so that if there is going to be some sharing, the more difficult cases are shared with you. And then the white person gets the easier cases. I'm not sure if there's a way of, well, I guess she said just being able to look at some of the information in terms of the number of cases. Is it 9? Is it supposed to be we're evenly allocating these cases, or we just get to decide how they're going to be divvied up? That's something that could be asked to a supervisor, like just what is the procedure for allocating these assignments? Why is it that I get 7 of the 9? Is that an even distribution? And if so, how? Just staying, you know, in the question lane with trying to assess how it is that they're determining who's going to get these assignments, the number of assignments, all of that. But that is so common in workplaces where black people consistently get the most. Even Chris Darden, we talked about that in the book club. They were going to give him the most difficult witnesses. We'll give you Mark Furman and these other lying racist cops. You get those witnesses and I'll take the coroner and the fellow who was walking the dog. Like, that is so common in workplaces where, and then they wonder why black people have all these problems set up to fail. Talked about that before. Number again, 720-716-7300. Decode 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Other folks dialed in. If you have a thought, observation to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Oh, hi. This is the victim from Canada.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Gus and Carl and Ness. Yeah, I'm just experiencing something. I'm trying to see if I could get some justice for me from my work situation. And then every step that I try to take, the suspected racist, they seem to always be one step ahead of you. And it's like Mr. Fuller always says that because we live in a system of white supremacy racism, you can't expect to get justice within a system that depends on deceit non-justice and violence. But even though that is the case, you still can try to produce something that has never existed, and that is justice. So, you know, the only thing that he says is you have to use codification and try to use the logic that came with the universe to get the answers for the questions that you need in order to get a constructive result. Because Mr. Fuller always talks about the only thing that now white people should be concerned about is whether something, whatever what you say and do is constructive or non-constructive. And there is nothing in between. So that's basically what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to produce justice for myself, even though I know that justice doesn't exist anywhere on the planet. But even though that is the case, you know, I've realized that that is my assignment, you know, to try to produce justice for myself, and if I can, justice for others. So that's what I'm currently working every day and trying to do that. Thank you, and I'll mute my line.
Much obliged, caller in Canada. Best of where I will hope that you have a constructive effort, constructive and consistent effort in working towards getting justice for yourself, others, if possible, in the work environment. That's the best that all of us can use, trying to use words as best we can, reveal truth, strive towards getting some correct treatment in the workplace. I'm going to make sure I get all of the emails in. I think before we get to the conclusion of the broadcast, we have other folks who dialed in too, but I think we'll get all the emails in. So next one, female victim of racism, much obliged, our caller in Canada, female victim of racism wrote in, greetings, Gus, anyone who treats you negatively. Oh, this is going back. So we got two people going back to the victim who asked on the previous workplace racism broadcast about if you have victims in a workplace setting who they're nice to you, right? If it's just you all, and then once suspected racists arrive, then they ignore you or start to mistreat you. So we got more suggestions on that one. Anyone who treats you negatively or distances themselves from you in front of white people is telegraphing that they are not to be trusted. I've had to learn to detach my emotions when dealing with non-white people in the workplace and have few expectations. That is so important, having correct expectations. This is another victim of racism. This is not my brother. This is not my sister. This is not my homie. This is not my tag team partner in counter racism. This is just another victim of racism. Correct expectations. I would gradually reduce my interactions with them, but keep it courteous. That has been emphasized so much. Not trying to mistreat anyone. Keep it courteous, but just another victim of racism. I'd like to reiterate the point made on a previous broadcast that racist suspects in the workplace often ask you questions that they already know the answer to. Last week, I joined a Zoom meeting slightly late and caught the tail end of a conversation my manager was having with a few other people already on the call. They immediately stopped talking about the matter. The following day, she started questioning me about the issue, not realizing I heard the conversation the previous day. This has happened a few times, and there are other occasions where it's clear to me that I'm being tested. I do not react, as I believe she does it to unsettle me. That happens all the time in the system of white supremacy, where white people, suspected racists, are doing things deliberately just to try to unsettle us or get us to be nervous and that type of thing. That is constant in the system of racism. Her behavior serves to remind me that she is a racist suspect. Finally, I was at a workshop with a work colleague, racist suspect, before the lockdown. During the session, she left her seat, presumably to go to the restroom. I did not see her leave, but noticed her notebook on the floor and an apple next to it on the filthy carpet. I assumed she dropped the apple by mistake. Lo and behold, she picked the apple up and started eating it when she returned. Echo. Here we go. I never accept food from people at work. She didn't say, I never accept food from white people at work. She said, I never, with capital N-E-V-E-R, never accept food from people at work. Bedrock codification. Much obliged, our female victim of racism. The email again, untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. Other folks with us, if you have commentary to share, suggestions, your own situation you would like to touch on, proceed. Folks are one of our other folks down in Miss Brashear's part of, or I guess not. I was thinking she might be close to North Florida, but she is not. She is in Southwest Florida, so she is in the Sunshine State, but not exactly neighbors with our caller at the courthouse. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to just the host, the listeners and callers. Yeah, I definitely see a lot of the orange and blue attire around here. We have the campus over here, and the courthouse is a few blocks down the way. I have some reports I'd like to share. I'm going to start out with there was an aspect from the conversation, from the talk that I had with the supervisor. So I don't know if I shared it, but, you know, she was like, you know, I just think, you know, this conversation is over, you know, because I was being too real, I guess. And, you know, I just said, I said, hey, you get to run away from this. You know, I don't get to run away. And I remember saying, and I know it's over for you because you can't handle it. You know what I mean? So she started walking off. And then I said, you know, I'm ready to share these reports that I have since 2011. And it's... is going to be reported soon with the top clerk. So they, like I said, they started trying to be like, have a good weekend and, you know, things like that, wanting to walk through the department. So I've been watching them, and it looks like they've been informing the clique as well. My next one is, there was a black female that said she wasn't feeling well because she was sharing a headset with a white person that apparently tested positive, like way on the other side, on the white side. So apparently, I guess she got food poisoning, eating Chinese food, apparently. So she said she was having a sore throat or whatever, so she was out for 2 days. and apparently she seems to be doing okay. So I guess this person is going to be out for 2 or 3 weeks, white woman. My next one is another white woman was helping me to help make copies and help with the customer service because I was over there by myself. And she said that I'll be helping you out. I have the phone. I have her phone, the black female's phone, forwarded to mine. So we came up with a plan to where we can have the phones on a rotation. And she named two names and an additional two names. All of them are white. And they can help answer my phone. And then so she started thinking, like, toward the end of what she was saying. And she used the phrase that, you know, I have some support over there. And then she started looking up. And I said, yeah, exactly. You have support. And that's what I was trying to tell her. Her meaning the person in the first example, like, you know, you need to get some people over here. Like, why don't you come sit over here? You are the supervisor. That's why I came to you. I'm not going to nobody else. So, yeah, that's what I was telling her. So she's a white person, and she ended up saying the phrase, I got your back. So on my next one, another CLIQ member came into the break room while I was on the phone, and she looked at me in a peripheral, and I'm like, okay. I know what she's trying to do, trying to listen to what I'm saying, because they had, like, pretty much the entire MAGA clique, as I call it, one part of the courthouse or another trying to do espionage, I guess. So I just got up and just walked out, walked into another area. My next one is another member, white woman. She walks through the area and she asks, said, oh, hey, Blank, how you doing? So I just asked her a question. I said, how are you? I didn't answer it. So she says, oh, well, you know, I'm living the dream. So I don't know if anybody's heard a white person say that. I'm living the dream. So I think that is an act of racism because, you know, I mentioned the Dr. King holiday one time in the courthouse. So I think that may have been an association with that. I might not be right on the etymology, so, but I think she was being a racist. So in response, I just said, huh, like that. And she just started giggling, and she just walked out. I saw one of the judges that I hadn't seen in a while. So she was like, oh, wow, look at who this is. This is just a celebrity sighting. So I just started laughing because, you know, I hadn't been upstairs. I hadn't seen all the people in the courts. So she said she was late for a hearing or whatever. And she said she was eating a pumpkin muffin from Panera Bread. So I know this person tries to be, I guess, more health conscious or whatever. And so I wanted to share that. And I have one more. No, actually two more. There was a couple, you know, a white couple who date each other in the civil area. And the female is just extremely white supremacist. It was reported to me that she made a comment to a black male and black female saying, well, you need to tell your people to learn how to cook this or something. And the white man that she's, you know, she has children with, I don't know you're supposed to be saying that to them. So, you know, that reminded me of that situation. Like, basically, when you say they're not ignorant, the plural words, you people and all of that, because I've heard that before. And, you know, you need to be telling you people or your people to know how to cook this. So I don't know whether the apology came out, but the black female said, well, you don't see me calling you trailer trash or something. So I don't know where it went after that, but I know they tend to get very racist. So, you know, these members are all over the place. And I wanted to share a Facebook post. This has an image where it says this person, this female clique member, it says, when friends are asking for my advice, and it has three images. So on the first image, I guess it's supposed to be representing her. And it says, I have an idea. And the friend on the second image says, no murder. And the third image says, I no longer have any ideas. So violence, destruction, you know, malicious intent, same as usual. So definitely that MAGA and me, to use a metaphor. And I've been pointing out the metaphors that my supervisor uses, and she just laughs about it. And that's all I have to share right now. Thanks for allowing me to speak.
Wow, that's the sort of thing, that type of social media post. Like, we just, I think it was last week, it was after the Capitol. It was a black guy. He's a Navy SEAL veteran. He said that he has social media software that basically it examines social media postings for things of that nature, so that employers can say, whoa, we need to red flag this. We got people on here who are talking about being killers and, you know, making jokes about murdering people and violence and things. Like, whoa, that's, you know, in what they call in the mood and the climate of what happened at the Capitol. Like, wow, we might want to keep an eye, you know, on someone who's even talking like that. That's what Gavin DeBecker, the gift of fear, that's the sort of thing he would talk about. Like, whoa, even someone who's joking about killing people and violence and murder in a workplace context, like, wow, might want to be mindful about that. What's funny about killing someone? What's the joke in homicide? I've said before, look at the social media. You can do a little recon, do some research. You might be amazed at what Miss Bashir, she said, you can't really show your racism in a business setting. So, you know, you have to refine on social media. They might be a bit more honest. So do your intel with your coworkers and be mindful of what you post. I have heard other white people say to me, like in a context of, oh, how you doing, that type of a thing, a greeting, just living the dream. I've heard that response pretty frequently. And I never really, because I don't say it. It's not, I've never used that saying. And I'm not sure if I've heard too many non-white people, if any, say that. I think I've generally just heard white people say it, but I never unpacked it or thought about what does that mean? Why are they even saying that? Especially this week, this month, why would they be saying that when there's so much talk about the dream and dreamer and all that? Let's see. The got your back. Oh, did I miss someone? Oh, fine on.
Oh, no, I was just making a comment. Just like her.
Right on. The got your back. I put that right in there with all of the homie pimping Negro slang type of things. I've heard that. That's another one. I've heard white people say that to me in a workplace context. even if it's no black people present. I said before, white people like to do that. Things, stereotypical Negro slang that they like to weave in and have fun. White people have whole books where they talk about this, how they, that's one of the ways that they practice racism, and this type of stereotypical Negro slang and the way that they'll use it. That would be, and I wouldn't even have a response. Oh, you know, I got your back. Probably with the hate you give. The headset thing, like, I guess she said it maybe it was just a food poisoning thing, but I mean, woof, in this environment, like, it might be. I know we have folks who work in an environment where you might be on the phone and maybe you have a headset. It might be best to get your own headset that you can take with you every day. I would still clean it, you know, get some sanitizer, what have you, so you can clean it down. But I don't think I would want to share a headset in this environment. Maybe I'm a scaredy cat. You know, I just, I would feel some type of way about it. Maybe even the phone too, but I mean, I guess you can do more to clean that down and such, but definitely the headset. Yeah, I wouldn't want to share a headset in this environment, even if I had to get one my own, which I would not leave at work. The documentation, the white woman who just said, oh, I'm done with, you know, all of this. I've tried, I've engaged, and you're unruly, I'm done. I'm getting out of here. To be expected with white people, exactly, that, you know, hey, I can just, I tried, I'm done, you're incorrigible, nothing can be done to solve all of this. With document, with like a decade of documentation, like, oh my Lord, I would be super concerned. Yeah. Like, it would be bending over backwards. Like, have a beautiful, spectacular weekend. We got you some Starbucks coupons and another bag of peanut M&Ms, and we got your brand new headset, some extra hand sanitizer on the way out. Like, man, employee of the month, parking spot up front, like, anything we can do. Here's the TV remote, put the channel on whatever you want to watch for the day, just pick something to watch. Man, 10 years? Like, oof. I know I have got to be in there at least 50 times, because I have cut a fool for at least the last 7 of the last 10 years. Like, I would be super concerned. So I would just keep documenting. Like, that's what, you know, we encourage. I feel like anybody, if you're in a workplace setting, the more documentation you have, that just puts you in a better position to show that this has not been a one-time thing or a one-person thing, that this is what they said, a culture. This is a part of the culture of the work environment that we have here, and the values that we espouse in this workplace, how people are treated, even that you were talking about in terms of resources and help. When the white woman says, I got your back, like, man, the supervisor should have my back. Shouldn't have to be that I keep having to whine about, well, I won't say whine. Shouldn't have to be I keep having to report we're not getting assistance over here in the segregated section. She should just be able to come over here and help, like that is the case with everybody else. We don't get the most help. We don't get assistance like other people. And I've seen that in workplaces as well, where it'll be groups where they have mostly black people or a higher number of black non-white employees. It'll be the same type of thing. They don't get the same resources. They don't get the same help. If somebody is out or what have you, they don't get additional support staff or what have you. All of it super common. And it's not that these people are ignorant. This is in fact might just be more unjust networking, where we deliberately sit around and snicker, you know, on text messages and what have you. Up there, short staff, the colored section is really going to be stressed today. They got all the phone calls routed over there, and sit around and laugh about, like, I'm pretty sure, yeah, that's the type of thing that happens in lots of workplace environments. They're not dumb, they're not ignorant. They love seeing the black people just work their fingers to the bone, when this could have been avoided. They could have sipped one maybe even two white people to the colored section, and we all could have had an easy Friday. They don't want to do that. Much obliged, our caller in Florida. And again, the courthouse, man. These type of shenanigans, I expect that at the Waffle House. You know, I expect this at the Burger King. This is the courthouse. Standard operating procedure. Plantation is the plantation. Other folks with commentary, they want to make sure they get in.
Have you heard?
Thomas in New York. Yes, sir.
Good evening, Gus. Good evening to the calls. I was calling because I was an attempted victim of a workplace scheme, and I just wanted to make the family and everyone aware of it. I got a text last week on Thursday, or about Thursday, from a 281 number asking if I was Thomas Smith. So I was like, who is this? And the responder said, he was a recruiter. They're looking for people who are looking for work. And he said he got my email off of Indeed and or Career Builders, you know, one of those, I guess, back when I was unemployed and looking for a job. They had my resume still in their database. And he called my number. So I decided to see what this is all about. You know, it sounds hey, someone. Maybe this is the God shining upon me, you know. He said he was looking for full-time employees at a company called Research Laboratories. Research Laboratories. So I looked them up real quick. It seems like they deal with some type of new cancer treatment that replaces radiation. And, you know, I'm looking it over while we're doing this texting. And he said they're opening a New York office. But in the meantime, they're looking for people in the New York area who will work at that office once they open it to be working from home due to COVID and the fact that they weren't able to get into the area, but they need people to do certain things. So I asked what positions are available. He sends me a list, data entry, clinical service supervisor, physician assistant, tech support rep, registered nurse, CSR, medical assistant, administrative assistant. Which of these are your specialty? I answer. He said you could work whatever hours you want as long as you put up 30 hours a week working from home. He says that in your current location, we're paying $35 an hour. It'll be a 10-day training, which will be $15 for that orientation training. All done from home. So I asked some typical questions, and he answered. And he asked some typical interview questions, and I answered. So he asked me if I was available right now to speak to a manager via Skype and do an online interview because he was in, seemed to like me. So I said, sure. So, you know, I get on Skype and can't see the person, though. It's still texting. And the person said he was unable to do visual Skype today because whatever technical problems. We had a two-hour interview. I mean, he asked me a whole bunch of questions. You know, then he gave me all of the job duties. Wanted to know how if I did these things in previous jobs. I explained, you know, my experience. All of this to go on. So he's like, okay, I'm going to hire you. I believe you can handle these job duties, and you'll start getting trained next Tuesday. He says, I need you to start work ASAP, so I need you to get the training. He says, the company will provide you with a new Apple MacBook Air 13 with internet. Do you have any problems with Wi-Fi? I'm like, no. He says he'll also send you all the working materials you need. He says, and there's some things that you'll need to purchase from one of our certified vendors in your area. And then he asks if you have a Target, Best Buy, you know, Walmart, blah, 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 around you. I'm like, yeah. So he says he'll send you the money to purchase these things. He says you'll receive a paycheck for the purchase of the working materials from the accounting department. We will issue the check and have it sent to your house via FedEx or in the regular mail. This will be sent to the address that you gave us. And he wanted to know more information, so I gave him more information. I never received a check or anything, or I never received anything from human resources or any other things that was what we discussed. Like, yeah, still, you know, have HR reach to my email, because I'm skeptical, but I know this is different than other situations with COVID-19. So I'm thinking, I'm kind of on the fence about it. I'm not 100%, you know, sure this isn't a scam, because I've been scammed before, similar thing. So the next day I text, you know, well, I never received anything from human resources. You know, he said, well, that's not a problem. I told you you'll be receiving a phone call from the supervisor on Monday. Now, he never told me any of this. So I'm like, this guy isn't telling the truth. He said, he'll let you know more about the position. Also, your name will be boldly crested on this laptop, and you'll get this and some iTunes, this or whatever. So I'm like, all right, whatever. So now I'm like, I'm 100% convinced this is a scam. You know, like this isn't how this works. So I get to work Monday. Mind you, on Monday, this is when everything is supposed to be in my email. This is the day I'm supposed to be receiving this check. I check my email, nothing from this HR, but I get a Skype. He says, I was just informed right now that an accountant will be sending you a check via email. And I'm like, what happened to the check that was supposed to be sent via the mail? Like, now, you know, he says, that's done by just sending you these very clear images of the front and back. Once you get it, you can print it out, take it to your bank. They'll understand what to do. Once the funds from the deposit check have been made available, you'll need to make a payment to our affiliated vendors who are responsible to help you get all your work materials and have them shipped to your address via FedEx. So I'm like, I'm looking at all this and I'm like, man, this dude is, everything you're saying is different than what you said earlier, you know. Since the technology has made it easier for us these days, the check will be emailed to employees to have it mobily deposited. They email the check to me. So it comes in my email. I open it. It's a $2,300 check, but it's from Marion County Board of Education in Lebanon, Kentucky. Now, mind you, this is supposed to be research laboratories. So I text him, man, I'm not putting these funds in my account from a school district. This is supposed to be a cancer treatment center. Unless you can verify all this, I assume this is a scam. I put this check in my bank account. Tomorrow it'll be negative $2,300. You know, so he says the check does. The check is from one of our vendors. We have plenty of people that we do business with, blah, blah, blah. I know it's all nonsense. So I said, the check is fake, Gary. That's the guy's name. And there's no laptop. This is a scheme. I'm familiar with it. If I deposit this fake check, I'll get real money that will be eventually deducted from my bank account when my bank discovers the check is fake. I said, please do not call me unless you can verify this isn't a scheme. Other than that, I don't expect to hear from you ever again. So, intricate scheme. I mean, they sat here and did hours of texting and interviewing and stuff, all for it to be for me to get this check. And once I got it, then I'm supposed to send the cash, you know, however, from my account to their account or whatever. And then I'm stuck holding the weight of everything. This was something that happened to me before with money orders. I had a job offer. Someone sent me money orders. I take them to the post office, and I was skeptical. And good thing the guy really took a good look. And he said, nah, if you put these in your, if I cash these for you with your ID, the FBI will be looking for you. These are fake. So I would have cashed those money orders and did all the stuff I was supposed to do with that money for this person, shifted to them, and then a week later, the feds would have been knocking on my door. So just be very aware of the scheme, and that's all I wanted to say. Thank you. Oh, well, did want to say another thing. So I get to work on Monday. And mind you, we've been closed since COVID for the last few months. We work twice a week. I work 2 weeks, then I'm off 2 weeks, then my coworker works those 2 weeks. We're alternating like that. I'm hardly there. And they say, hey, we got your review. I'm like, a review? So I get a review from the white people on Wednesday, and they actually gave me money and stuff. I couldn't believe it. In a raise. So that worked out. I tell you, white people, they've been paying you to do nothing. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. I know it's coming. I mute my line.
Much obliged, Thomas in New York. I certainly don't think every black person has been paid to do nothing over the last few months. But if you are in that number, spectacular. I hope, ride it until the wheels fall off. So enjoy. I hope that, or I guess I'm glad, I'll say it that way. I'm glad you were able to kind of neutralize the scam effort that's kind of elaborate to take up all that time and energy to go through all that. I guess just folks be mindful if it sounds like, even if it's some sort of recruitment offer and it sounds a little sketchy, or I won't say sketchy, but it sounds a little suspicious about how they acquired your information, email or whatever it is, how they got your information and then what they're saying, like, really be careful. It's been so much. They've been talking about so many scams and things since the whole Rona epidemic started out last year. So just be really mindful, especially if you know, like, you have not been sending your resume around. You don't have a LinkedIn page or, you know, whatever it is. Like, I have not been out soliciting job offers. And so to have this kind of come out of the blue, and then it's, you know, sounding kind of odd with these peculiar stipulations and things, like, be very suspicious about all of that. And I think we even had some other folks before where they said they felt like it might have been like some pranks and things by even some of their coworkers and trying to scheme on them and make it seem like, oh yeah, you got this job offer and blah, 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 that type of thing. So just be really, really mindful and try and do as much as you can to research, verify who's, you know, reaching out and contacting you. It's lots of what they call deep fakes, trickery, 2021. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Don't wait till the last few minutes if you think you have commentary to share. We have a little less than 20 minutes left in the program. So if we missed you totally, if you have another suggestion, something else you want to make sure you contribute, go ahead and share. Get your hand up if we've missed you totally. We will be here tomorrow. The compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll catch up on what has transpired over the last week or so. Passing of Cicely Tyson, like Hank Aaron, Cicely Tyson this year. In fact, it was almost exactly with last year, Kobe Bryant. I think this time last year, it was Kobe Bryant. This time around, for it to be Cicely Tyson and Hank Aaron, it just has a very, this year just feels like 2020, like, redux. Hope that's not a bummer. Thomas in New York, I guess not. He said, hey, it's been great. Rona has been a come up. Get paid to sit at home and do nothing. Continue. Like, I hope it continues, but whoo, it has not been, not been grand for everyone. But we'll review tomorrow, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, the compensatory call-in. Let's see. Other folks that we have missed totally, if you have a hand up, thoughts to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. I'm calling from South Florida. I sent in an email about the school systems in South Florida a couple of programs ago. And I was just calling. I'm just tuning in. I tuned in late, so I missed the earlier part of the program. I did send a follow-up saying that I have not taken the vaccine, and I don't plan to unless it's made mandatory. And at that point, I live in the system. I don't know that I'll have much much choice. But what I called for was I just finished. I usually listen to the archives as opposed to calling in because I do get nervous for some reason speaking live on the program. And I do wonder about other people tuning in for surveillance. You know, non-black people, white people surveilling. So I tend to just listen to the archives. And I just finished listening to the recent program with the author of a book, and it related to the Capitol riots. And I found that program to be such a clinic, like a great training on how to work around refined racist, because the guest that evening was super refined to the point where people would probably say that this is a nice guy, a person who could be considered an ally, they're sharing knowledge, and he was sharing information, but that doesn't mean at the same time he wasn't able to effectively practice racism. And I found that the questions that the callers asked and the redirection that you provided as the host was a good training for non-white people who have to live within the system and try to function to learn from. So my own personal experience today, let me back up a little. So what I learned from that, listening to that archive, was it's just important to stay in the question lane. Even when sometimes you realize they're practicing racism, it can be upsetting. It can make you feel emotions, but staying in that question lane, and even if your question doesn't get answered, either just repeating the question calmly or just being satisfied with the response and then trying to analyze what does that response mean is better than trying to make a statement and telling the refined racist that you know that they're practicing racism right now, because then that just can lead to other issues. Okay, so for brevity, let me get to my personal experience. So today I met with the white person in charge of the building that I work in. So this is the person who is at the top of the chain in the individual building that I work in. And I had a meeting scheduled. I assumed it was a virtual meeting because it is still COVID. And when the meeting time arrived, I was looking online for the link, which they usually have a link for you to click and zoom in or whatever. There was no link. So I called the person's secretary, and they informed me, no, this was scheduled as an in-person meeting, which was a surprise to me. So I made my way over, and as soon as I walked into the office, I looked for the clock, because I went in there saying, I don't want to be in here very long, but I don't want to appear rude. This is a person who is responsible for my income, so let me look for a clock so that when the time is drawing near for me to get back to my duties and leave the meeting, I can be aware of that and leave. When I sat down for the meeting, I made an effort to listen. And this person who's in charge he speaks a lot. He talks a lot. And I just said, you know what? This is a guy, a nice guy, who would be considered a refined racist, in my opinion. Like, you would, if you were not aware or you were not knowledgeable, you would think this is not a racist. This is one of the nice ones. So I let him speak, and he had a lot to say. And while he was speaking, I was listening to the terms he was using so that when I knew it would be my turn to speak, I could use some of the same terms that he used to respond, rather than revealing too much about myself or too much that I didn't want to reveal. When it was my turn to speak, I stuck to answering the specific questions he asked. In past meetings, I've sometimes been overly confident because I do have a lot of experience, and I might overshare and then find myself in a situation where, like, I'm John Henry, I'm now overworked because I talked myself into something, you know, that you know, would overwork me. But this time, I answered just the specific question he asked. I didn't share anything else about additional experience, just what was asked of me. And when I felt as though I had answered everything he wanted and things were going in a productive way and the time was winding down, I quickly looked at the clock and I noticed, okay, I need to move on, but I don't want to be rude. So I gathered my things in a way that was hopefully polite, but I started gathering my things and I noticed that signal worked because he started to stand up and bring the meeting to a close. So I realized, okay, this is a good strategy for when I want to get out of something. So I gathered my things, he started to get up, and he began to conclude the meeting on his terms. So I left that meeting feeling like it was very productive because I had only asked specific questions when it was my turn to do so, and I had also let him do most of the speaking because these people, refined races, are quite comfortable with being the so-called experts. They're quite comfortable with talking. So when I just allowed that to happen, even when I felt like, oh, maybe he's practicing racism, he's saying some things that are incorrect, rather than correcting him because the situation wasn't unsafe, it didn't warrant it, I let him say those things. And then when it was time to go, I left. So I feel like this program, listening to this program, is very helpful in providing those opportunities to hear refined races. I know, and I'll try to wrap it up. I think I've been talking for a while, but I know some people prefer like the unrefined races. They feel like, well, I like the ones who you know where you stand. And I get that logic. But for me, I feel like they all pose the same danger, the refined ones, the unrefined ones. So even when I'm dealing with a refined racist, I feel like, especially because of this program, because I'm aware, because I'm still on my toes, I'm not comfortable, I'm not thinking this is one of the nice ones, or if they are so-called nice, I recognize that that's a tool of their refinement, which could still be a danger to me. I feel like I can still navigate, not necessarily, you know, solve the problem, but at least maybe avoid new problems or danger for myself from listening to this program, staying in the question lane, allowing them to talk, but then recognizing when it's time to get out of the situation and doing so in a way that's cordial or appropriate. So that was just what I wanted to share. And thank you again for hosting the program. Thank you to your callers, because so many of your callers have shared experiences that I learned from. Even when I don't agree with the actions that they took or their point of view, I learn from what they said and how they share, and I really, really appreciate this program. So that's what I wanted to share tonight. Thank you.
Much obliged. Many, many calls. I think half of the people that are with us this evening are down in the Sunshine State. Lots of love down in Florida. Well, I won't say love. Lots of participation. See that way. Lots of participation down in the Florida area. Much obliged. Hope context of white supremacy helps you be a little less confused about racism, white supremacy, what it means to be classified as white, and things that we can do to help solve this problem immediately. The guest that she was talking about was Professor Philip Dre. Suspected race soldier, white man. We were talking about his book, The Capitol Siege, as she said, and then his book, At the Hands of Persons Unknown. I think a number of folks who are with us right now got questions in on that broadcast. You can go back and check out the archives, but that is spectacular. I love hearing folks kind of adapt their code. And in fact, and we did read your email, ma'am. She said she didn't get to hear it, but we got all the emails in this evening. So we did read your commentary about not wanting to take the vaccine down in the Florida area and all that. But with having to go in, right, to the physical location and already saying like, hey, I am not hanging out here all day. Let me find the clock so I can already kind of allocate how much time I'm willing to invest in this meeting. Spectacular. I'd say that right there is another form of compensatory conversation control, because you are already laying down the framework for how long we're going to talk. I'm already going into this saying that this is not going to be an indefinite dialogue. You're not going to tie me up for hours. I don't even want to be here in the first place. We should be distancing or virtual or whatever it is. Let's make this a 30-minute conversation. Let's make this sequel, whatever we need to get into this and then be out of here. And then you don't even have to be rude. You don't even have to tell them, you know, from the beginning, like, I'm only staying here for 60 minutes, cracker. You don't even have to do all that. Just come in. We talk. Oh, I've already looked at the clock. I know in my mind, oh, we hit the 30-minute mark. Boop, start getting my things together. Nonverbal communication. We have so many folks who've talked about that over the years. Nick was ready to go. Me too. I'm not waiting. I got other things to do too. Boop, let's wrap this up and get on out of here. Spectacular. Like, not wait. I'm so huge about that. Not wasting time and energy. We talk about the exact same type of thing when it's those tacky company outings or parties or whatever it is. Like, this is not going to be an indefinite investment of my time either. Like, we're on the clock here. You got 30 minutes. Already looked. Once it gets out, whoop. Well, it's been grand. Got things to do. We'll catch you. We'll see you next month or, you know, whenever. Long time from now. But thank you all. God bless. Drive safely. Moving on. Conversation control right there. And as she said, staying in the question lane. Just asking questions. Getting resolution from things. I'm not going to step up and volunteer myself, because that happens a lot too, where we end up talking and trying to prove things and end up getting 15,000 assignments. As she said, John Henry, as I'm trying to prove how smart we are to these white people, and I'm a team player. I can do it. I'll show them I'm loyal. And I'm here. I'll learn. I'll ask questions and get out of here in a prompt manner of time. Brilliant. And as she said, I'm not going to be, because they'll try. We've had a number of folks just today talking about being in workplace environments where they will try to provoke you and just being knowledgeable. Like, even if they say things that, oh, I think they just said something racist. Got your back. Pimping. Our brother Cookie died. Put documentation. If I'm going to ask any questions, but I'm not responding from a place of emotion. I'm not even responding from a place of surprise. I expect it. We talked about that even before you go into the workplace, especially for something like that. You take a few moments, take some deep breaths. We did that this morning in the yoga class. Take some deep breaths. Clear your mind. You can even visualize, what are some things that these race soldiers are likely to say? Think of something really tacky. Already got that. This is what I'll say. This is what I'll do. Get my responses together. Then you can go in, handle your business, ask your questions, take your notes, and get out of there promptly. But just being in a correct state of mind, and I think most important, I say it again, having correct expectations of other victims that you work with, correct expectations of suspected racists that you work with, correct expectations even of yourself and how you want to see yourself responding to, you know, whomever, white people, non-white people, and just responding in the work environment in general. But correct expectations for the system of white supremacy and the work environment specifically. Our caller in Alabama, if you have comments here to share, you should be with us, sir. Or ma'am, sorry.
Oh, no, this is male from Alabama.
Right the first time.
Long time since I spoke to you, Gus, and yes, sir. And long time since I spoke to you, and I hope all is well as it can be in the system of, you know, racism, global racism. But specifically, I would like to focus on what's going on in this country. Carla Thomas, he spoke on it. You know how he said a lot of people, you know, they're getting, you know, paid to not do nothing. And I was calling in just to listen, but, you know, I wanted to share my experience personally. You know, I don't use a call in, even when I was calling in a lot. I don't usually comment on workplace racism because I would rather listen to other victims, you know, but to my point, you know, the CARE Act was supposed to cover all, you know, American citizens, you know, not even American citizens, even immigrants, you know, was being covered under the CARE Act. And at that time, during the COVID pandemic, when it first kicked off, I was truck driving at the time for a temp company, and we was hauling freight for Mercedes-Benz. And I was laid off for 12 weeks, you know, and I filed my state unemployment, calling in every week, you know, to get my unemployment. And I let other victims know. I told other victims prior to this, you know, while I was doing this, I said, I know that they will strip me of the CARE Act. Even though I was, you know, truck driving for Mercedes, you know, it's not like I'm working, getting paid under the table or nothing like that. No, I'm over the board, you know, just regular truck driver, you know. And so I knew that I was going to be stripped for the CARE Act, as expected, you know. And so they came in, they said, well, we're not going to be able to cover you under the unemployment because you don't have any money in the state of Alabama because you worked in California that prior year. And so I was like, well, yeah, but under the CARE Act, doesn't it change the regulations so we'll at least get the $600 a week, you know? And they was like, yeah, that's how it's supposed to be, but ain't no telling when you're going to be able to get your money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know? And so I knew that they were practicing racism, you know? So I reached out to my state official at the time, Doug Jones, and, you know, to try to get some assistance, you know, in which I must admit that his office did come through real quick. FEMA allocated like $4,000. To my account, you know, so they can pay out, you know, I could have money in the system in the state of Alabama, and I can get that money with the $600 a week. Soon as FEMA allocated that, Alabama shut my claim down the very next day. They, boom, shut it down. They said, well, they ignored the money FEMA sent, denied me my unemployment, said you was working in California, even though I paid taxes every year in the state of Alabama, you know, they said, well, you got to go to California to get your money. All right. So they sent my claim over to California. I restarted my claim, which I didn't actually have to restart it. They were just supposed to pay me out. California was supposed to pay me out for the money I had in the system when I was driving trucks there in 2019. So California said, well, we got all of your weeks that you claimed, and we're going to pay it out. But we need you to prove that you are who you say you are. So you need to send us two forms of identification. I did that promptly. You know, I need my money. I already been waiting over 12 weeks. Now it's probably 16, 17 weeks, right? But I'm back working now, right? I'm back working, you know, whatever like that. So I just need to get paid the 12 weeks I was laid off. So I sent them that. As soon as they got the two forms of identification, they started stalling. Didn't want to pay me. You know, they got that around about August, you know. And they said, well, we're going to pay you. We're going to pay you. We just ain't got around to it. There's something going on, whatever. It just, I'm going to end it up here, but it just, they still haven't paid me to this very day. I'm still fighting to be covered under the CARE Act. I'm working. I'm always working. I'm a truck driver. That's what I do. But a lot of people have been stripped of the so-called citizenship. You know, just another spit in the face. And let me add one more thing before I get off. They were really rude to me. One of them jumped on the phone for no reason. This one of the unemployment workers with California. And I suspect she could be a non-black. She don't come from the lineage of slavery and Jim Crow. She probably could have been not white, but she could tell that I'm from the Southeast. I'm from Alabama. I'm a black male. You know, she jumped on the phone real rude. Oh, and we're not doing this because we're racist either. you know, and that's when I just, you know, I cursed out by the Cochran firm also. You know, Johnny Cochran representing a history of civil rights defense and, you know, stuff like that. So that's the reason I reached out to them. Now, ain't nothing we could do here. Ain't nothing, you know, motherfucker this and that. And then start talking about brother this and brother that. You know, just, you ain't got the brother man me. You know, just treat me like a human being. He ain't got to curse me when I'm calling the Cochran firm. And he represents a history of, you know, civil rights. But I'm sorry for taking so long. And I appreciate you letting me get what happened to me across. Thank you, guys.
Man. Caller in Alabama, good to hear from you again, sir. Long time listener, caller, participant. I'm sorry. I'm not surprised, but I am sorry to hear that you had to have ongoing had to deal with all that terrorism and tackiness and just trying to get resources. And that's been so common. We played some of those reports over the past year or so where Black employees, Black entrepreneurs even, have had the exact same type of report in terms of when they go to file out paperwork and people being rude, racist, even though that's a new one for them to be rude and in the process of now, this is not racism. That's not what it is, but you're not going to get any help. that has been, you are not an anomaly. It's been lots of that over the past 11 months. And then the same type of thing like, oh, well, it looks like, yeah, you should qualify. You should get that $600. But woof, I have no idea when that's going to be coming. Like that has been rampant throughout this entire process. So I'm not surprised. That's why I said, like, I'm pretty sure it's been a substantial number of Black people. This has not been whoopee, best of times, and just kicking it. It's been lots of that type of thing. Not being able to get help, people being rude in the process of telling you that they can't help you, and or I guess you might get some help, but we have no idea when that help might be coming. Hope you can fend for yourself until it arrives. That type of thing. Lots of that. Again, be very frugal. Not into, you know, unnecessary spending, trying to save up as best we can, even though this is, I mean, kind of a extreme example, but this is why it is always great to save, 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 as opposed to racists encourage a lot of unnecessary and reckless spending. Save, 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 save. System of racism, white supremacy, they love to have non-white people, Black people, especially in very weak, vulnerable positions, even more so than normal. With that, we have done our 3 hours.
Could I add one more thing?
I guess if it's not too long, sir.
Yeah, it won't be just real short. I would like to add another form of terrorism also, and this with Alabama Power. I had to go back over the road, you know, drive trucks, you know, just to keep money coming in. I cut my breaker off from the inside, and I cut the breakers off on the outside, right? Well, no power would be running to my house. And I had a zero balance in the beginning of November. I had my power off since before Thanksgiving. And since then, I have paid over $840. And I have been home probably for about, like, 3 days, right, since Thanksgiving. And they have charged me $840 for, like, 3 days worth of power. And this is documented. You know, it's paid off. You know, victims have to do what they have to do. But the terrorism is insurmountable. It's beyond comprehension. It's just, they're dedicated. The word you use, dedicated, they're dedicated. They're dedicated. Yes, sir. And thanks, Gus, and I'm sorry for being so long-winded.
Yes, sir. Alabama. Wow. That is note to end on. They talk about all that energy, conversation, conservation, and that type of thing. Like, wow. Wow. We will be here tomorrow. Compensatory call, and we'll catch up on a week of terrorism. Hopefully it's not insurmountable. It is certainly extreme, but hopefully this is something that can be vanquished, a problem that can be solved. We will work toward that goal, or continue working toward that goal tomorrow. Much obliged for everyone tuning in. Hope it was worthy of your Friday evening. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. We will need lots of high-level thinking to solve this problem. I don't think any of white people's poisons, narcotics, are going to help us get closer to universal woman, universal man. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled. If we got to go out, I still strongly advocate let's hunker down, stay in the house. Miss Bashir, her family are out and about causing problems, the state of Florida and beyond. I just don't think we should be in the business of trying to go out and confront these folks if need be, unless you're prepared to do all that. If you're just trying to go out and get something for your child or necessities, that type of thing, going from work, leaving from work, trying to get back to your residence, man, avoid any of these verbal confrontations. You have no idea. Miss Bashir, she could have been armed. She could have been with a whole lot of other family members, relatives who are also armed. You do not want to take those sort of risks with everything that has happened this year. Unless you left your residence prepared for mortal combat, minimize conflict with all these type of situations, no verbal kerfuffles, exiting. It's all about getting to a safe area. If you need to call enforcement officials, do so as you are exiting. Be thinking in mind, man, these folks might have firearms and they may have woke up today. They may have left the house thinking, I am going to do some killing. If you didn't leave your house with that in mind, get out of there. All of that said, we're sober. If you got to go out, sober. You're buckled. If you're driving, we're not on the cell phone. Again, we need all our attention. Let's be aware of our surroundings. For two, we're trying to minimize contact with the Mark Furmans of the known universe. Just doing the small things, being sober, being buckled, being aware of our surroundings. Little things that we can do to try to stay as safe as possible. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Shut I'm a up. Victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.